answer what the Prime Minister's called a grown-up diplomacy.
Home Secretary Yvette Cooper, and this was the reality just hours later.
See a French warship, and just next to it is a dinghy full of illegal immigrants. The French making absolutely no attempt whatsoever to stop it. They've been shadowing it for the last 3 hours.
That's her Conservative opponent, if you will, Chris Philp. You'll hear from him later in the show. Staying with politicians, Kemi Badenoch says, I am a Christian, but what was it that robbed her of her belief in God? Crackdown on cosmetic cowboys.
We couldn't swallow, so I was put on nil by mouth. We still don't know what it was, really. Don't know how much of it is in me.
Nicola contracted botulism after having Botox. And Nervous Times, interest rate decision later this morning. We'll look ahead to that. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, President Trump has raised the prospect of in-person talks very soon to secure a ceasefire in Ukraine. It follows a meeting described as highly productive between Mr. Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, and President Putin. The US previously set a deadline of tomorrow for Moscow to reach a peace deal or face severe economic penalties. LBC's Washington correspondent, Simon Marks, says talks could take place in the coming weeks.
We think it's possible that that meeting might take place in Istanbul, might take place in Riyadh, but we don't know critical answers to vital questions. Has Donald Trump agreed to talks without preconditions? How is he going to make sure that he doesn't get, as he's put it before, tapped along by the Russian President Vladimir Putin?
The latest wave of US trade tariffs have come into effect. Donald Trump announced the new tax rates on dozens of countries last week. India's tariff rate is set to rise to 50% from later this month unless it stops buying Russian oil. Tougher rules are to be introduced to crack down on cosmetic procedures carried out by people with no medical training. Clinics offering things like fillers, Botox and Brazilian butt lifts will need to be licensed and follow new restrictions to protect children. Figures seen by LBC show nearly 750 women in the UK have been maimed by unlicensed practitioners since 2023. Ashton Collins is director of Save Face, a register of accredited cosmetic surgery providers.
What can happen if they go wrong? In the most serious of cases, you could have a pulmonary embolism where the filler gets into the blood supply and it travels to the heart or lungs. And in that case, you're almost certainly going to die. But also what you have is a very real risk of severe infections, abscesses, cellulitis.
Analysis suggests a quarter of England's councils could lose money as part of funding reforms. The Institute for Fiscal Studies says proposed changes to funding distribution would create big winners and losers. Some inner London boroughs could see falls of 12% in real terms. The Bank of England is widely expected to cut interest rates for a fifth time in a year. Economists are forecasting a quarter point reduction in the base rate to 4% this lunchtime. It could reduce pressure on some mortgage holders and home buyers. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 91.64 after closing up 21 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland, mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
24 minutes after 7 on Thursday, August the 7th. One in, one out, and as I said yesterday, one big con. It will have zero impact. Indeed, the boats were virtually queuing up as like taxis yesterday to make the crossing. We'll look at that in more detail. Staying with political matters, the Leader of the Opposition, Kemi Badenoch, says...
I rejected God, not Christianity, so I would still define myself as a cultural Christian.
She was speaking with the BBC, but what was it that said she's a Christian, but she doesn't believe in God? And can you be both? Are you going to be able to tell me that, yes, yeah, I am a Christian, but I just don't believe in God? Do they not go hand in hand? In other news, they won't be hand in hand, but possibly there will be a meeting between Vladimir Putin and President Trump.
There's a very good chance that we could be ending the round, ending the end of that road. That road was long and continues to be long, but there's a good chance that there will be a meeting very soon.
Crack down on the so-called cosmetic cowboys. Have you or someone you love been a victim? Tell me your stories on that. Plus,
the Met Police has vowed to tackle shop theft after a gang of 12 stole £60,000 worth of items from a supermarket within 6 weeks. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma with the exclusive.
In a related story, why the Metropolitan Police are determined to close down as many police stations in London as they possibly can. And as it is revealed, one in five NHS doctors are considering leaving the UK. We'll explain why and suggest, as we've helped pay for them to train, could they perhaps stay around for a few days?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Make no mistake, this is a French farce. The deal that was put forward with great trumpeting yesterday, Yvette Cooper coming on this show, the Prime Minister speaking earlier in the week, is not worth the paper it is written on. Not least with this idea of one in, one out, and remember the Home Secretary refusing to say when it would actually start, refusing to say what their ambition was. This was just the floor, not the ceiling. Refusing to say where they want to be at the end of the year. Refusing to even say exactly how these people, apart from being online, how you apply to be one of the one ins as opposed to the one outs. Now we learn, get this, that upon arrival here, you can say that you can claim human rights by saying that you're converting in your faith. An investigation by one newspaper today says one of the suggestions, ploys, ruses, whatever you want to say, is you arrive in this country and you say, I am a Muslim, but I'm converting to Christianity, and I fear persecution if I go back to my home country. That will stop you being one of the one-outers. It is a farce. Now, supposedly it was a landmark deal, and as I said, the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, praised it, talking about it being the product of grown-up diplomacy with the French.
Well, 6 months ago, people said this was impossible for us to do this. And certainly we know previous governments have attempted to get agreements with France and never done so. But we've been working very closely with the French government, and that's, they have signed this treaty. It also has the support of other European countries. I think this is very important. And also alongside this, France have also agreed to do something they previously refused to do, which was to change their maritime rules so that they can intervene in French waters, actually prevent the boat crossings from French waters in the first place. So this is the result of very extensive cooperation between the UK and France, what the Prime Minister's called a grown-up diplomacy, because in order to strengthen our border security, we need to work with the other countries who are on the other side of those borders in order to do that.
And when do you imagine the first returns will take place?
Well, the first detentions we want to take place in a matter of days, right, and then we will be referring those cases immediately to France. There are then the processes that we need to work through, and we are ready to resist any legal challenge that comes forward as well. But we do want to see returns taking place in a matter of weeks, but we will need to work those processes through.
The promise? The reality, less than 24 hours later, the boats were flooding across the channel, the French still looking on, witnessed by Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp, who took to the waters. He took a Farage, leaf out of Nigel Farage's book yesterday.
So the government announced yesterday they had a new deal with France, supposed to stop boats crossing the channel. So I thought I'd come out here and see what's going on. I'm on the English Channel, probably about 7 or 8 miles off Calais. And behind me you can see a French warship. And just next to it is a dinghy full of illegal immigrants. The French making absolutely no attempt whatsoever to stop it. They've been shadowing it for the last 3 hours. It's about 2 hours from British waters. They're going to be arriving in the UK later on today. So quite clearly, the government's claims to be fixing this with their new deal are not working. The evidence is right behind me on the English Channel. and the French doing absolutely nothing whatsoever to stop that boat.
It is, as I say, a French farce, and we'll hear from the Shadow Home Secretary, Mr. Philp, later in the show. First, though, to Lottie O'Brien, who's a news reporter with the Daily Express, who has been reporting from Calais. I think she may be back in the UK now, but she joins me now. Lottie, what did you see in your reporting for the Express? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I mean, it was absolutely shocking, to be honest with you. I don't think people quite understand the sheer scale of the problem until you're actually in France among these camps yourselves. I mean, I was there just 2 days after the deal was announced. And I spoke to so many migrants out there who said they were completely aware of the deal, yet it wouldn't make a single difference because there is such a small percentage chance that they will actually be returned back to France. I mean, it was a complete laughingstock amongst people in the camp. So it, to me, it was just shocking. And these camps are massive. They are just huge. And each morning you have hundreds of people waiting in the sand dunes, you know, to come down to get onto these boats to go to England. And the determination, it just outweighs probably any deal that could be struck between Britain and France.
Completely. Lottie, what did you see French police or the equivalent of French border force doing?
Absolutely nothing. I mean, they are fully aware of the launch spots where these boats are going from, and they launch from the same spots each morning. There are, I think, three popular beaches where these boats go from. And the police are very aware of that. Each morning you see them, you know, maybe one or two police cars standing around. They watch them go down the canals where they get to the beach. They don't intervene. Perhaps, I think, I was there 3 days a few weeks ago and I saw one interference, perhaps two. But I really do believe that's only because they knew that we were there watching them and filming them. Whereas, you know, on the other two beaches, there was no police presence and these boats were still getting to England. So I didn't see them do much at all.
Are you able to estimate how many people, how many asylum seekers you think you saw in the various camps, Lottie?
I would say thousands.
Literally in the thousands?
Yeah, okay. In the thousands. I mean, 100% in the hundreds, but that's only from the people that I saw with my own eyes there and then. I just know from seeing where they were sleeping, from where, you know, we saw them in the supermarkets and on the streets everywhere, you see them just... The scale is just, you know, it's off the scale, to be honest with you. And people are coming from all over the world because they're hearing about how great England is for people to go to if they arrive illegally. And that's not going to stop unless Starmer takes stronger action.
Lastly, coverage in the Daily Express today includes a series of pictures in which, one, it appears the French Navy, again the French Border Force, recover the life jackets. So once they get them halfway across, what happened? The Border Force then takes them and then tosses the life jackets back to the French. Is that what we do?
Yeah, that is exactly what they do. I mean, it's all in favour of the French, this entire thing, because they, to be honest with them, the living conditions in France for these migrants in these camps, they're so disgusting, they're so dire. And I spoke to so many people living there who were saying it's just not safe because there's so much gang violence in these camps that I'm not surprised the French police aren't doing anything at all.
Did you fear for your own safety at any point?
I mean, I think as a journalist, I had automatic protection with the camera and the microphones, but right. I definitely wouldn't want to be there as a young woman by myself, just because you don't know who these men are. They are going around in large groups, you know, in the hundreds.
Yes.
And I was threatened, I think, once, and I received verbal abuse another time. It's just not a nice environment to be in.
Lottie, thank you for your time. Well done for your reporting. Lottie O'Brien is with the Daily Express. 13 after 7, Steve Smith is CEO of Care for Calais, regularly helps us with conversations such as these. What do you think the impact of the one-in, one-out deal will be, Mr. Smith? Good morning.
Yeah, hello, Nick. Never mind the morals and the ethics of it, never mind the fact that it's treating people like pawns on a chessboard, you know, like a supermarket buy one, get one free offer, sort of grubby commercial deal where somebody comes in and somebody goes out. Never mind that. This will have a negligible impact. The numbers involved, we understand, are microscopically small. So up until about 2 weeks ago, we were talking around 50 per week being sent back. And the French newspaper Le Monde estimated that at 6%. So there's a 6 in 100 chance that you'll be sent back. And how do you select those 6 in 100? And we're talking about people who are fleeing. I know it always comes down to the numbers, and Lottie's just been telling us about the numbers in France. It always comes down to the numbers. But actually, it should be about what they're fleeing from. So we're talking war, conflict, persecution. We're talking about true horrors.
Not all of them, Mr. Smith. Not all of them, Mr. Smith.
Well, depending on what statistics you go by, something like three quarters of them who apply for refugee status get it given to them.
Well, as the Times reports, because one of the favourite tricks is to suggest that they've found Christianity.
Well, yes, I heard you say that earlier. It's not.
Well, it's not me saying it. It's what a fairly reputable newspaper has discovered.
Okay, we don't know how many people we're talking about in that instance, but never mind.
Well, it seems quite a good ruse, doesn't it? I can't possibly go back. I've suddenly become a Christian. I converted halfway across the channel. What a great wheeze that might be.
Well, it does, but it's a bit of a rabbit hole at the moment because we don't know what numbers we're talking about. We don't know if that's ever happened. It may have happened. Who knows? But what we're talking about is people who are prepared to risk death in the channel and what level of deterrence would be needed that's greater than death. So being the chance of being one of those 6 in 100 that are returned, it's, as I said, microscopically small. Of course, that's not going to put people off. And when the Home Secretary was talking about this yesterday, she said the reason she's not going to give any numbers is because it's a pilot scheme. They're going to ramp the numbers up. Well, from what to what? No idea. But more importantly, she said she doesn't want to give away operational information to the people smugglers. The people smugglers don't give a monkeys about this. They don't care how many people are sent back. Of course they don't. The reason she doesn't want to give any numbers is because those numbers probably are 6 in 100. And she knows jolly well that when she said that, when it was mooted a few weeks ago, that people turned around and said, hang on a minute, that's not going to work in a million years, is it? So
I have to leave it there. Your problem is you're employing logic and rationale to the equation here, and you've seen through the whole idea. Steve Smith, thank you. Good luck for the work you do. You're a very, very good-hearted soul, you and your colleagues. You're CEO of Care for Calais, and I'm grateful for your input. Well, both sides, whether it's the journalist, whether it's the charity work or the charity boss, this is a farce. How dare they suggest this is a result of grown-up diplomacy? We'll take your views on that. Plus, in London...
This essentially comes down to us having to choose between keeping officers on London streets or retaining the current position on all front counters, which may be a symbolic point of access, but are largely underutilised.
As knife crime in London increases, as theft goes up by nearly 30%, here's a wizard idea. We'll shut down the police stations. We'll have more on that later in this hour. 7:15 LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The US has raised the prospect of direct talks between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin as soon as next week. Washington is to impose additional trade tariffs on India for buying oil from Russia. And the government's announced new measures to crack down on rogue operators providing dangerous cosmetic procedures. LBC weather. Sunshine and showers in northern areas, mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the Essex stretch of the M25, and this is going clockwise to junction 30 at the A13. It's because a lorry was on fire earlier and there were queues on the approach. Also, the M3 is very busy southbound from the M25 to junction 3 at Lightwater, and that's where a car has broken down. Very busy on the M4 going eastbound onto the elevated section. Delays of about 20 minutes and also delays of about 15 minutes. It's on the M11 southbound to the North Circular Road. On the train, Southwestern Railway services are delayed by about 20 minutes between Chessington South and Motspur Park following a signal failure.
LBC.
With Little Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Little Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Little Plus and get at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August, full T's and C's apply, see little.co.uk/spin.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
Are you ready to win big? Enter now at winplus.co.uk to win huge cash prizes and loads more. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect your pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7, Andrew, you will be the first caller. One in, one out, one big con is what I'm calling it. Front page of the newspapers, there are no two front pages the same, so let me just pick a couple, not quite at random. The Daily Mirror, story that we're going to be doing later, cosmetic cowboys crackdown. One has to say that's in part as a result of the very powerful campaign that the Mirror has waged, so congratulations to them. And I want to hear from you, of course, if you or someone you know or love has been a victim of cosmetic surgery, it's either here or overseas. I know automatically we're going to think of countries such as Turkey, but we'll take your views on that. The Times has a picture of one of those boats. It's not their lead story, but one of the boats bringing people to the United Kingdom just a day after this ridiculous one-in-one-out deal. The Daily Telegraph tells us that Starmer's pledge on taxes is thrown into chaos. This is, I mean, they're preparing the ground, aren't they? What is it called? Rolling the pitch, I think, for what's going to be, I imagine, a pretty hideous autumn budget. The Sun talks about ongoing problems at the BBC. And let's finish with The Eye. I like this story. And we might be speaking about this later. Labour's Minister for Homelessness ejects her tenants so she could hike the rent. Yes, you did hear that correctly. The Homelessness Minister kicks tenants out from her townhouse she's renting out in East London and then relists it for more £700 extra in rent. We'll look at that in more detail. To the LBC app, they talk about, as we shall later, the possibility of Trump and Putin meeting as early as next week. And let's take one other. Mail Online, a horrific story about a millionaire recruitment boss who threatened to gang rape and set alight Virgin Air stewardesses. I'm delighted to say he's now gone behind bars after appearing at Isleworth Crown Court. Andrew's in Halifax. I just think it's one farce. It is a French farce. What's your take on this? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, it's the hokey-cokey agreement, isn't it? It's but the only thing that needs shaking all about is the entire British political and judicial system that continues to facilitate this invasion.
You should be a columnist for the newspapers, because I should tell you that in The Sun today, where have I found it? Rod Little, you let one in, you let one out, you do the hokey-cokey and you mess the voters about.
Go.
Exactly what you were saying.
Well, it is. I mean, where perhaps you and I would disagree of people like Steve Smith that you interviewed earlier, I view people like that as nothing more than invasion facilitators.
Oh, that's... I don't know about that. He and his colleagues are kind-hearted folk who don't want to see people effectively living or freezing to death in the woods of Calais. I think we have to be fair there.
Well, I think we also have to say that I don't want little girls in my country being raped and sodomised by...
Okay. Andrew, I'm going to end it there. I'm grateful for your input, but you know that there is a case going before a court. You would not want to prejudice that in any fashion. I appreciate your view, and I understand how strongly you feel, but I do have a duty not to allow legal proceedings to be interfered with. So, Andrew, we'll talk again. I will leave it there. For all our safety, I sense. And if we're talking safety, let's come to another matter. Story in London, but it has, of course, repercussions across the rest of the country, which is the news that Londoners will have access to a number of fewer police stations under radical closure plans revealed yesterday. Now, this would seem to break a promise made by London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan, who said there would be one accessible station 24 hours a day in each of the capital's 32 boroughs. But my guest can't answer to that, because this is not, unsurprisingly, Sir Sadiq Khan, who refuses to appear on the show, but it is a senior officer of the Met. So I'm grateful that Matt Twist, Assistant Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, joins me now. And I saw you were at City Hall yesterday talking about this. Thanks for coming on, Assistant Commissioner. So currently, how many police stations do we have in the Met area? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. So there's a lot of different numbers, aren't there? The police buildings, we own quite a lot of buildings. It's reducing
but police stations.
So police stations, in terms of our front counters, we're currently in 38, and we're going to be reducing to 20 that are open, and we're reviewing the sort of opening times of those. And I think it's really important to know, and I mentioned this at the London Assembly yesterday, the Met's got a £260 million hole in our budget, and it's inevitable that we're going to have to make some choices that are going to change the way that we police London, which will be unpopular with some. And we're reducing the gap, we're reducing that hole through a mixture of driving as hard as we can at efficiency savings and reducing our headcount by 1,700 officers and staff, which is significant. Mm-hmm. So there's no way of doing this that can't be noted, that isn't going to be noticed or not felt somewhere. But what we are doing, and this is really important, is whilst we may be reducing the number of front counters, we're not reducing the number of police stations, we're just reducing the number of front counters. We are investing in neighbourhood policing. We are increasing the number of neighbourhood officers. We've increased the number of officers dealing with public protection offences, the most serious sexual offences. And we're starting to see the results because the performance is starting to come through. We've seen a significant reduction in neighbourhood crime compared to last year. Burglary, theft, our outcome rate, our sort of performance in terms of how we're investigating these crimes is going up. So based on the same period last year.
What is the role of a police counter, as you call it? What are they there for?
So there are a number of reasons, and in terms of making the decision, we've looked at three factors. We've looked at the sort of the volume of people that come into it, we've looked at the geographic spread, and also, to your point, we've also looked at the operational necessity, because sometimes having a front counter at a place where there's a custody suite is really helpful, because solicitors, appropriate adults, families can get in and out. So it is a way of accessing police services, but what we've seen over time...
what will happen in Wimbledon if the folk can't access police services?
Well, they can, this is the point. Since 2012, the number of people reporting crime at police front counters has reduced by over half. So it used to be about 12% in 2012. It's now 5%. In Wimbledon, to your point, we report about 2.5 crimes a day. And
yes, so where will those people go now?
So there are a number of things they can do. They can, 95% of people either phone the police via 101 or report online. Also, because we're investing in neighbourhood policing, the neighbourhood teams in Wimbledon and across London will have more people in them.
But how do you get to those neighbourhoods? I don't live in Wimbledon, but if I live in Wimbledon, how do I get to that neighbourhood team?
So, there are a number of ways. So, at the moment, we've just launched Met Engage, which is a way of people contacting the police when in a non-emergency. Online, people can report crime directly.
But not everyone
directly.
Is online. You do appreciate that, Assistant Commissioner, don't you?
Of course I do. Mm. And that's why there are a number of options.
And some people might not want to go online with certain information that they want to share, of course. There's that issue as well.
And many people call us, and we then attend and we speak to them. And having more... Making the choice between keeping underutilised front counters open... or having more officers able to go and actually see people out and about on the street.
When you explained those, you said that some of these measures, you said, quotes, will be unpopular with some. Tell me who they're popular with.
So we're calling these tough choices. We've got to save £260 million. I think what we're doing is we have to shrink the size of the organisation because of the amount of money we have.
But this is at a time when some crime, knife crime is up by 9%, Assistant Commissioner. Theft overall is up by 28%. A mobile phone gets stolen in Westminster every 15 minutes. So the Met's response is to downgrade the number of officers and close police counters. Why would that be?
So that's not it. That's not it at all, actually.
Well, knife crime has increased by 9%, Assistant Commissioner. Theft is up by 28%, and a phone does go. So
I understand that. And
so why would we close police counters? Seems a strange position to take, doesn't it?
It's exactly the opposite of that, because, actually, we have to save the money. We have a budget that we have to live within our means, and we've got choices. We can either close some front counters, which is, at the moment, one of the tough choices we're looking at, or we can reduce the number of officers that are available to the public out on patrol or in neighbourhoods actually dealing with this. And we've had some huge success. Our neighbourhood teams, as you will have seen, I think, across London are now making real inroads into the retail crime. We've got a number of operations specifically focused on...
Well, the reality of all of this is, Assistant Commissioner, Selina Scott was right, wasn't she? When she was unfortunately jostled and, I think they use the word, mugged or robbed in the centre of London earlier this year, and she tried to find a police station and it was shut, and she tried to find a police officer and she couldn't, she was right. Selina Scott was right. The policing presence is not here, and what that poor woman went through will now go for more people, wouldn't it?
Well, what
you
we're
recall
making...
the Selina Scott
story. I do. We're making is a difficult choice, though, to actually prioritise having more officers out and about on the beat... rather than staffing underutilised offices sort of 24 hours a day.
How on earth can West End Central be underutilised?
Well, West End Central isn't a police station anymore. Charing Cross.
Precisely. Charing That's Cross where she is, went, thinking it was.
Yeah, Charing Cross.
I know you didn't take the decision, but they closed a police station in West End Central.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's nuts.
This is part of the overall funding position for the Met, unfortunately, in that over a period of time, we've had to significantly reduce the number of buildings we have in order to balance the books.
All right, well, I wish you well. Before I let you go, Assistant Commissioner, there is supposedly a day of action plan for this Saturday for the pro-Palestinian organisations. I would understand that's going to be quite a drain on resources. How do we look ahead to that, Assistant Commissioner?
It is. So we've got an experienced command team, and as we've discussed several times before about public order, what's really important is the police have to deal with things as they find them. We also have to enforce the law as it is, not as others may wish it to be. So there's a lot of plans going in now to deal with. If people do turn up and show support for a prescribed organisation, then the police will respond appropriately.
But what of their tactics that they want to go for mass arrest? They almost want to, I don't know, outnumber you or swarm your colleagues. Yeah. What of that?
So we've seen that before, haven't we, in different sort of protest guises, and the plans that we have in place, we'll be ready to deal with it.
Lastly, something of this magnitude, closing this number of police stations, I appreciate you coming in. Why isn't it the Commissioner?
Because I was at the London Assembly yesterday.
But why wasn't the... Okay, back up a little. Why wasn't the Commissioner at the London Assembly yesterday?
Because
closing 18 police stations, breaking a pledge by the Mayor, not by the police, breaking a pledge, but the Commissioner doesn't do it himself, and you get put forward. Why?
Because I lead the 20,000 people that are in frontline policing, and actually...
What does Sir Mark do then?
Well, he leads the whole organisation.
Right.
So
he's not available.
I was at the London Assembly yesterday talking to the Assembly members about this, so it seemed entirely sensible that I come and talk to you about it.
Good luck with the men and women who serve under you. Thank you for the job that they do, and good luck on the weekend. I fear there may be some challenges coming your way, and I'm grateful for your time. Matt Twist, Assistant Commissioner of the Met. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrone, LBC. Let's get the news. Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump says there is a good chance of face-to-face talks in the coming weeks to discuss peace in Ukraine. It follows discussions between Vladimir Putin and the US Special Envoy Steve Witkoff in Moscow yesterday. The US is to impose additional trade tariffs of 25% on India for buying oil from Russia. New levies on dozens of countries' exports have come into force this morning. Ministers have announced new measures to crack down on rogue operators providing cosmetic procedures. Clinics will need to meet stricter rules to offer things like non-surgical Brazilian butt lifts, fillers and Botox. LBC weather. Sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland. Mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Would they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food. It's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, Squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Morrison's MoreCard customers. Play our Wheel of Prizes game in the MoreCard app today. Spend just £10 in-store or online to unlock a spin. Win big prizes like a year's free shopping worth a whopping £3,000. To free goodies like our classic Market Street donuts. Play now on the MoreCard app.
Morrison's, to shop at Morrison's.
More card app required. 18 plus. Excludes Morrison's Daily, Deliveroo and Amazon. T's and C's apply. See online for details. End 24th of August.
Introducing the Ford Capri. Rewired for the electric age. And now you could win one. Take a test drive in the new all-electric Capri to enter. And you could win the icon Rewired. Search Win a Ford Capri. Go electric with Ford. To enter, book a test drive online by 31st August and complete by 30th September. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, we will come to your reactions, more of your reactions regarding the one-in, one-out deal, and possibly talk about the closure of police stations. I'm acutely aware this is in London, but imagine if this is happening in London, which has the highest population and the highest number of police officers and the highest number of police counters. Imagine what's happening in your area. And where is Sir Sadiq Khan? He'll never come on this show. But of that promise, that an election promise, that there would be a front counter in each of the boroughs available 24 hours a day. My goodness, it'd be like banking hours now, wouldn't it? Right. Talking about banking, let's get into the world of finance. Kathleen Brooks is financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB and joins me now. Okay, time to stare into your crystal ball. What is the interest rate decision likely to be in your view, Kathleen? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think it's going to be good news. We're going to get a cut to 4%. So I think that's, you know, the first cut since May. Some good news is likely to be ahead.
What do they have to weigh up? What are the pros and the cons? Mm. What will they be wary about, would you say, Kathleen?
Yeah, I mean, it seems a bit strange cutting interest rates when inflation is so high, and they are also expected to raise their inflation forecast today. But I think they're still going to signal that rate cuts will be coming, but they could be getting to the end of the cutting cycle. But I actually think they're going to keep their powder dry, really, because they really need to wait for this October budget to see what taxes are doing, what's growth looking like later in this year once we've got tariffs to deal with as well. And then they'll make their decision about, you know, future path of monetary policy. Because it's just too early to tell at the moment, Nick.
In your world of finance, no conversation seems complete without looking ahead to that autumn budget. And, of course, the issue as regards taxation and this black hole. What's the latest on that, Kathleen?
Yeah, so NISA, which is an economic think tank, said that there'd be a £51 billion black hole. Keir Starmer yesterday refused to rule out that there wouldn't be tax hikes on those three big taxes of corporation tax, VAT and income tax, which seems like really bad politics, actually, because it's almost like drip feeding bad news and that taxes will rise with, you know, 3 months to go until this budget. So, you know, essentially, I think it puts a major question mark over the claim that they're stabilized, the government is stabilizing the nation's finances. We're already taxed very, very highly. Now they're going to be potentially doing it again. It feels a bit like it's untenable because even the IMF, so the International Monetary Fund, said that spending cuts could be preferable to more tax rises for the UK economy going forward. So a lot for the government to weigh up as well.
Something else we need to weigh up, and I think we were talking about this last week or whenever. You can tell the state of an economy by how many cranes are in position and how building is going. And that's not looking good either, Kathleen.
No, not many cranes going up at all. House building has potentially fallen to its fallen at its fastest rate since COVID, since May 2020. So that's not great for the government either, because they were very keen on building as much as possible. They've cut the planning regulations, obviously, but it comes back to this point on tax, Nick, because essentially it's not working because you can't make it work. It's almost impossible for house builders to get, you know, to build more if it's costing them so much to hire staff. It's very challenging times for builders, I think, going ahead. Also, we've got an economic weakening, but there might be some bright spots. This came from some PMI data, which is essentially sentiment data, and we are quite a negative bunch here in the UK, so it might not be as bad in reality. And also, of course, that rate cut coming later today, that could kind of boost the outlook for house prices.
Finally, who's been leaning on Apple?
That would be Donald Trump. And he got a big plaque for doing it yesterday from Tim Cook. I don't think any business in the UK would be giving Keir Starmer a plaque at the moment. But he basically, Apple, their share price absolutely surged yesterday by 5% because they've said that they will invest another $100 billion in the US to avoid tariffs from Donald Trump. So this is all kind of cap in hand to Donald Trump. What can we do for you, sir? Can I help you more, sir? And Apple are certainly doing it. They've said that they're actually going to build production centers in the US, including a smart glass production line in Kentucky, and try and move production out of China where there are high tariffs attached.
Grateful for that, Kathleen Brooks. Thank you. Financial analyst, research director at the trading platform XTB. Matthew, coming to you for your view on our conversation about migrants. Let's just feed some of the social media and the texts that are coming in. Robin Chertsey, when migrants hit our shores, we're forced by human rights lawyers to house them in good accommodation, feed and clothe them. Why do human rights lawyers allow the French to leave them in tents and ignore human rights laws? They're obviously not as effective the other side of the channel, Rob. That's a good point you make. Thank you for that. Another one coming in on this. Robin, we need to take politics out of immigration. Politicians use immigration to win their case. Rwanda won't work. We will smash the gang, stop the boats. We see everything. The current failure is going to usher in reform. Even Trump is now sending people to Rwanda. Yes, did you see that? What supposedly the United Kingdom couldn't do now, and he's, whatever way you cut it, there's very few people entering the United States illegally at the moment. Lastly, Chris in Midhurst. I listened to Yvette Cooper yesterday. She's talking nonsense, flim-flams all the time. She needs to resign. And on the subject of the closure of police counters, I'll just read this one. Matt, Our local police station closed. It's now a funeral parlour. That sums it up, doesn't it? You haven't told me which part of town you're in, Matt, but thank you. Matthew's in Heathrow. Matthew, one in, one out. Your view. Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. I believe it. I mean, it's going to work. Once the attitude's going to change, once the hundreds and eventually thousands of people...
How do you think we'll get to 100?
Well, yeah, once people in Calais see people being accepted into the UK, asylum seekers, what does have family connections, they will then realise it's not worth going on the boat. It's a safe route.
But Matthew, people could get to the UK. Matthew, more than 25,000 people have arrived this year already. In fact, I'll give you the number. I've got the actual figure. What on earth is the impact going to be of maybe on a good week, 50? Seriously. Well, 25,436.
Okay.
We might do 50 a week. Come on,
take,
man.
But no, it will stop it. Let's take this 25,000 over in what will be security checked, what will be pre-approved before they arrive. They don't have to take the dangerous crossing. I mean, the number...
Were you listening to the journalist we spoke with, or the Daily Express journalist, that they're queuing up at Calais. They're laughing. I can't repeat the language the reporter said, because they just chant F England and get on the boats.
But it's people what are claiming asylum and they are got family connections. They're the people what's going to be arrived. We could pre-check them. It will stop the boats.
Well, let's see. Stop the boats, smash the gangs, Matthew. That's what you're saying. I don't see it. I sincerely hope you're right. And in time, we will find out. More calls on that in a moment. Thank you. Right, two other matters. And the suggestion that Donald Trump telling allies he plans to meet Vladimir Putin next week, followed by a three-way meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky, the, of course, Ukrainian president. This has raised hopes that some end in the conflict could be in sight. Let's turn to Sir Ben Wallace, former defence secretary, who's recently, of course, 2023, joins me now. How realistic, Sir Ben, are the chances of this meeting going ahead? Morning to you.
I think quite a high chance of the meeting. Donald Trump is a man when it comes to deals who's much more interested in the wedding rather than marriage. He likes the big ceremony and the pomp and the event, but actually they then unravel usually whatever deal it is, whether it's Afghanistan or others, further down the line. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's going to try and have that. It will look good. It will be lots of show. But ultimately, you know, I think we already know what's not going to be agreed. And that will be, you know, that will set the tone for the next few months. And meanwhile, Donald Trump will probably have moved on to something else.
It was a conflict that set the tone for much of your tenure as Defence Secretary, of course, Sir Ben. What do you see playing out over the next 12 months?
Well, I think two things. That there is pressure building on Russia. Its economy is starting to tilt a bit. The oil revenues are down by 30%, partly because of price, but partly because of sanctions. And at the same time, he is losing nearly 1,000 people a day into his meat grinder. And we now see from media reports that in places like St. Petersburg, areas that the recruiters basically avoided, now we're seeing a sort of action into the middle classes of Russia to get their sons to the meat grinder. That will have an effect. They are making advances in the east. Mainly their main effort is the Eastern-esque. They're making small advances at the cost of thousands of lives. But they are making some advances, and that will weigh heavy on Ukrainian minds. But what's not going to happen is that the West is going to recognise Crimea, as Putin wants, that Ukraine is going to de-arm, which is another one of their requirements, that the international community should recognise most of the occupied zones. That isn't going to happen, and therefore it's not really going to give Putin what he wants. Trump may try and get sanctions relief or offer a bit of carrot to Putin. But, you know, the Europeans are now, including the United Kingdom, piling in support to Ukraine to replace some of the American support. And the new American support isn't really American support. It's Europeans will be allowed to buy, how lucky we are, American equipment with European money to then give it to Ukraine. That's not the same as it happened previously. You know, that's Donald Trump sort of having his cake and eat it, that, you know, more money for American defence industries doesn't provide many jobs here in the UK, and in exchange giving, we're allowed to pass some of the kit to the Ukrainians. I think it's going to remain a place of a sad stalemate, high casualty rates, Russia taking small gains in hundreds of metres, But I think one of the mistakes of the upcoming summit is to exclude Europe. You know, two of the NATO three nuclear powers, France and Britain, aren't at the moment invited to that meeting. I think they should be. What we don't want is a couple of bullies bullying Zelensky. We've already seen President Trump on the bully tactic to Zelensky. That backfired. Putin is a remarkably known bully. I don't think we want to see that. And while Zelensky is brave, you know, in the end, it is Europe that will face the consequence of a bad deal in Ukraine, as well as the Ukrainians.
A couple of other questions while I have the benefit of you on the line. As a former senior politician, some military top brass have expressed concerns about the high number of undocumented young males crossing the channel getting into the United Kingdom. We have a new deal put forward by the government, one in, one out. Your take on that as you understand it, Sir Ben?
I think the one in, one out, I was the former security minister, the one in, one out is just bunkum. You know, as soon as we get somebody selected to be returned, the lawyers will return to the immigration courts, evoke ECHR, and even those individuals will take months and weeks. I mean, there's a lot of unrealistic promises around all of this. You know, I heard Nigel Farage say he would build Nightingale camps on military bases. Well, I can tell you, as the person who used to own the military bases or run them when we tried it the last time, he may well be able to do that, put prisons on camps. It'll take him 5 years, right? It will not be able to be done immediately. That's just the reality of our system. When I was in government, I tried to argue for the derogation of the European Convention of Human Rights, saying this was a national security threat. We can do that. France has derogated many times from the ECHR. That would allow us to detain people, because at the moment we can't detain them. That would be a strong deterrent, and it would probably allow us to return more people. There seems to be a resistance in government, and I remember in cabinet, Suella Braverman argued against me when I wanted to derogate from the ECHR. Remarkable. Ultimately, that is the problem we're going to have to look at and fix. You know, I don't think you should get the benefits of the ECHR if you've reached a point of safety already, such as France. Why do people then evoke the ECHR? Because they're not fleeing war by that stage. They've already gone through two or three countries that are not at war. I think we need to be much more stronger at deciding what we're going to do with the European Convention. Then we'll have real tools. And if we don't, this will just be another weekly gimmick, another announcement. It won't make a difference. Rwanda had a chance, but this government decided to cancel that.
And finally, another key defence matter, the Middle East. Next month, currently, the United Kingdom is looking as if it will recognise the Palestinian state. The Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, has put certain conditions on Israel, no conditions whatsoever on Hamas. A senior member of Hamas saying that recognition would be one of, and I quote, the fruits of October the 7th. Sir Ben Wallace.
Well, we should never, I've written ages ago, we shouldn't have a ceasefire with Hamas ever. We shouldn't support one. I've read Hamas's constitution. It's basically al-Qaeda. And Hamas has done awful things to its very own people in Palestine. I think recognising a Palestinian state can be a separate thing from the charge of rewarding Hamas. Remember, we have been in favour of a two-state solution for some 60 years. You can't have a two-state solution if no one seems to recognise the other state you want to have a solution with. And I think it is important we should put conditions very strongly on whoever governs both the West Bank and Hamas and Gaza.
And Gaza, yeah.
Make it clear. But we should also definitely put some concrete in handing out the prospect of a Palestine being recognised. I think that's quite important, especially as the extreme parts of the Israeli state now are talking about the total occupation of parts of the world that we used to recognise as Palestine in the United Kingdom.
Must leave it there. As ever, grateful for your time. Former Defence Secretary Sir Ben Wallace, thank you. Late to those news headlines, 7:48, LBC News, Thomas Watts.
President Trump's raised the prospect of in-person talks very soon to secure a ceasefire in Ukraine. The latest wave of US trade tariffs has come into effect, and tougher rules are to be introduced to crack down on cosmetic procedures carried out by people with no medical training. LBC weather, sunshine and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Lots of problems on the M25 this morning. Firstly, anti-clockwise, it's very slow from Junction 21 at the M1 round to 18 at Chorley Wood. It's because a car's broken down and one lane is closed. And then also, clockwise, it's busy at Junction 2 at the A2, and that's because a car's broken down here as well. Now, also on the M25, clockwise, it's very busy at Junction 30 at the A13, and that's where a lorry was on fire earlier. All the lanes have been open for a while, but it's still very slow. On the train, Southwestern Railway services are delayed northbound from Raines Park to Clapham Junction, and also there are minor delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield.
LBC.
When you're transported somewhere you've never been, when you discover hidden gems and amazing sights, when you just can't wait to pack your bags.
It's just stunning.
We should definitely go there.
I'm already looking at flights.
Nice.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy a world of travel from the comfort of your sofa. Search TV licence together.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Summer's here, and it's not just sunshine brightening your days. Big cash prizes could be coming your way with Win Plus, as well as chances to win the latest tech and loads more. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Win Plus. Great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Save this summer with Lidl Plus. Get 2 for £7 on burgers, jumbo sausages and more. And get 2 for £3.50 on our plant burgers, veggie sausages and more veggie classics. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today.
18 plus TV only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Imagine your dream holiday made possible by comparing cheap flights on Kayak, walking on an unspoilt goes on for miles beach on the Sardinian coast, plunging into the splendor of an idyllic lagoon in Greece. Ah, yes, this is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare prices from hundreds of travel sites and airlines to find your dream deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
8 minutes before 8 is the time. Complete change of pace from conversations about the Middle East and Trump and Putin to events here in the United Kingdom, and what's called a crackdown on cosmetic cowboys. Powerful piece in today's Daily Mirror, and it's worth noting the campaigning that the Mirror did on this subject, by Wes Streeting, who writes, cosmetic surgery was once the preserve of Hollywood, like tweaks, nips and tucks. It's now available online and on the high street. But while the industry has boomed, writes Sir Mr. Streeting, the law has not kept up, and the consequences can be tragic. And here to explain what action the government will take is Labour MP and Minister for Secondary Care, Karen Smith, joining me from Southmead Hospital in Bristol. So what are the measures that are coming in as of today, Minister? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. And what we're doing today is saying that we are going to act in this space, that we are going to regulate, which is a thriving and large business, largely run by and owned by women, many of them sole traders, and as an industry that's largely consumers are also mainly women. So it is, as Wes Streeting says in that piece, it used to be the preserve of A-listers, and now it's available to many. But, and I think it's a surprise to many that it's not regulated. We've had some tragic examples that listeners will be aware of. There was a consultation started under the last government. They also put in place the ability to bring in regulations. We have now analysed the results of that consultation, worked with the industry on that, and today we are issuing our response, which people can look at in detail, but is saying no more cowboys, we want to make this industry safe, we want to support the industry, we want to work with them to make it safe, and also bring in the regulations that under 18s can't be treated with these procedures either. So there's a lot to do. It's a complex area to get that balance, and you'll be aware, Nick, and viewers, that the regulation is a complex area between sure. supporting industry and keeping safe, but that's what we're progressing on.
So how would my listeners ensure that if they wanted to avail themselves of lip fillers, Botox or a Brazilian bum lift, that they're going to a recognised registered practitioner? What do they need to do, Minister?
Well, at the moment, it's not as clear. It's not clear. I mean,
when
generally,
do we hope that clarity might be forthcoming?
Well, that's what we are now going to start bringing in, and it will take time to get it right. But there is guidance available on the NHS website. It's a bit like most of our lives. You know, these are our bodies. They are our most precious thing that we have. So if it's cheap and it looks too good to be true, it probably is. So I think there is... the awareness raising that, as you say, the Mirror and other people have done, and to say, look, you need to really check on this. If it's too cheap, it's probably not good. Check the environment you're working in. There are a lot of really good practitioners out there, a lot of very good premises out there to be safe in.
To clarify, there's still time off. The registration system is still some weeks or months away. So. Listeners, everyone still has to be very vigilant. Is that what we're saying, Minister?
That's right. It will take time to get it right.
When do you hope it would be in place?
I can't put a date on that at the moment. We want to work with the industry to get it right in the consultation. There is areas to be decided about which exact procedures go into which category. The priority is these butt lifts and what's called red list procedures.
Sorry, you've got to help me. What's a red list procedure, Minister?
Well, I appreciate people might be having their breakfast, but generally it's around areas which we call intimate areas of the body. Shall I say that?
Right.
And people can look at that.
I had
around.
No idea. I was leading you down that path.
Yes,
apologize.
I'll stop there for your viewers.
Right.
So they're very clear. They're on the cons. People can look them up around some of which have led to some tragic events. And I'm speaking to you from Southwood, where the clinicians, the NHS, are also very keen to have this sorted because they see the dreadful consequences of some of these procedures. So work with the Care Quality Commission, who work with us all the time on making sure premises are safe. We've got them on board to work with us on these red list procedures and then look at the others. But be vigilant, yes.
Okay.
We want to work with everybody to support women in these industries.
A couple of other
businesses.
Matters. Well, you mentioned the NHS. Sadly, it would appear that nurses might be moving towards considering taking industrial action. We know that were once called junior doctors that have decided to take industrial action. Your message to them, Minister?
Is to keep working with us. We know that conditions have been poor. We had that in Lord Darcy's report last year. We said in our 10-year plan we want to work with staff. We've heard that message loud and clear. How staff have been treated is unacceptable. The conditions many of them are working in is unacceptable. That's what our 10-year plan is about. We've met with the nurses union again this week. West Streeton met with the resident doctors committee again this week. That's looking more promising. We really want to work with them. We acknowledge many of the issues they bring forward. We've settled on the pay for this year because we've supported those pay review bodies. But across the whole NHS, you know, over a million staff in all sorts of jobs, and I see them here very early in the morning here at Southmead Hospital talking to you. They deserve our support, and we're willing to work with them, absolutely desperate to work with them.
All right. Can I get your response on one of your senior colleagues, the Labour's Homelessness Minister, Rushanara Ali, who's ejected four tenants from her East London townhouse before then relisting the property for £700 a month more in rent? I remind you, this is your homelessness minister. Some people are saying she should consider her position. What would you say to her?
I'm not across the details of all of that story, but I understand Rushanara has said that she's absolutely complied with all legal requirements, which is what one would expect of
a good look,
government minister,
though,
and someone experienced her. Well, I can't comment on the details of that, but she has complied with the legal requirements. I mean, our renters' rights bill is very
minister,
clear.
And she ejected tenants from a property she owned so she could hike up the rent. What does that say of her and her view of her brief, her job?
I don't know the details of that. I know that she has complied with... Well, I know, need to know that she complies with the law and that we are, as a government, absolutely working on... private rented sector is a hugely important sector. I'm here speaking to you from Bristol. It's where, you know, we've had to do lots of work on, and that's what our Renters' Rights Bill has brought forward, to protect tenants, to make sure that they do have those rights. And I know
the firm
that
she used tried to charge tenants £2,000 for the house to be repainted, £395 for professional cleaning. This is the homelessness minister, minister.
And I hear that, but I can't comment any more than that, any more than I've been told this morning, as what that she has absolutely complied with all legal requirements, as one would expect her to do.
Finally, can you clarify the position as regards the one-in, one-out deal? It does appear that there is a bit of a gaping hole, in that anyone who arrives here can claim under the under human rights laws and then will not be valid to be one of the one who goes of the one-out. Is that correct? Is that what the treaty provides for?
Well, my colleagues from the Home Office have been working on bringing forward that treaty with France. It is groundbreaking in terms of working with France to get this right. We know how strong these gangs are, how they, as soon as you announce one thing, they try and do another thing. And I know Yvette Cooper and Angela Eagle have been talking about that this week. So if there are any loopholes that come about, they will be working very closely with our allies in France.
So we've signed a treaty with
France.
A gaping loophole, haven't we?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying if there are things to be learnt from the implementation of that, they will absolutely learn it. We are determined to break the cycle, this vicious circle, this cruel cycle for the individuals, the unacceptability of those small boats crossings. If there are issues to be resolved as a result of that, obviously they will be working very hard to make sure that happens.
Grateful for your time, Minister. Stay vigilant as the government puts together a special registrar even, if you want that cosmetic surgery. Karen Smith, thank you for your time. It's 8 o'clock. News is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, there could be face-to-face talks between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin as soon as next week. It follows a meeting described as highly productive between the US Special Envoy, Steve Witkoff, and Mr. Putin in Moscow. But Mr. Trump says it wasn't a breakthrough. The Ukrainian leader, Volodymyr Zelensky, says he spoke to his US counterpart after that meeting.
We discussed what was said in Moscow. It seems that Russia is now more inclined to agree to a ceasefire. The pressure on them is working. But the main thing is that they do not deceive us or the United States in the details.
The latest round of US tariffs on dozens of countries has taken effect. Donald Trump's also signed off on a 50% levy on Indian goods from later this month. Unless it stops buying Russian oil, the Indian government says it's unfair, unjustified and unreasonable. Ministers have announced plans for tougher restrictions on cowboy cosmetic procedures. It follows a huge growth in unregulated treatments being carried out in homes, hotels and pop-up clinics. Hundreds of people have been maimed by botched procedures, including Brazilian butt lifts and filler injections. Health Minister Karen Smith has told Nick that some have dreadful consequences.
No more cowboys. We want to make this industry safe. We want to support the industry. We want to work with them to make it safe and also bring in the regulations that under 18s can't be treated with these procedures either. So
the Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner has asked China to explain why some of its London embassy plans are redacted. Some drawings of the planned site at Royal Mint Court are blacked out. A final planning decision on the controversial proposal is expected to be made next month. Another interest rate cut is expected this lunchtime. Most economists are expecting the Bank of England to reduce the base rate by a quarter point to 4%. That would be the lowest level since March 2023. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 91.64. It closed up 21 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland, dry and cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Go Get personalised discounts with your Nectar prices. That's good food for all of us. Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 your Nectar prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. T&Cs apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after eight on Thursday, August the 7th. Coming up in this hour, what was it that robbed Kebby Badenoch of her belief in God? I'll be telling you later in this hour. In other news,
the Met Police has vowed to tackle shop theft after a gang of 12 stole £60,000 worth of items from a supermarket within 6 weeks. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma with the exclusive.
Why is the so-called crackdown on cosmetic cowboys so necessary?
My name is Danny and I'm a victim of a botched cosmetic procedure. I had painful Botox that left me in fear and I'll be speaking with Nick shortly.
What is leading to a possible exodus of doctors? Charlie Massey is from the General Medical Council.
Our health services are still under real pressure, and that's why we're saying that government and employers must make sure that working environments are fit for purpose.
Plus, how on earth does the Labour's Minister for Homelessness get away with ejecting her tenants and hiking up the rent? Answers to those questions and more over the next 2 hours.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Question for you. Can you be a Christian and not believe in God? And flip it if you want. Can you believe in God and not be a Christian? I do believe in God. I am a Christian. I don't practice it anything like enough, but that is my faith. I don't practice as much as I should, but I do at times of stress and woe and trouble. I do have a faith. But one person, one very prominent person, has been talking about their relationship with Christianity and with God. Kemi Badenoch was talking to the BBC.
I rejected God, not Christianity. So I would still define myself as a cultural Christian. You know, I went to a Church of England school, all those hymns, the hymns, and, you know, being in church, it always takes me back to that. My grandfather was a reverend, and Christianity in many third world countries in Africa and Asia is a big, you know, and Latin America is a big thing. It's a way of life. Religion was everywhere, whether you were Christian or Muslim, religion was there. It was just something that I grew up, that was just always around me. But I myself was never that religious. If I could get out of going to church, I would get out of going to church. But I believed.
And the leader of the opposition went on to expand her case, saying it was Joseph Fritzl, the story about Fritzl, I'll remind you the details of that in just a moment, which caused her to reject God.
And I thought to myself, no human being should have had to experience what this woman believed. And maybe because I was very close to my father. So the idea of a father doing that to his own daughter, for me, was a level of disgust and abhorrence that I'd never experienced. And I couldn't stop reading this story. And, you know, I read her account, how she prayed, you know, every day for to be rescued. And I thought, I was praying for all sorts of stupid things and I was getting my prayers answered. You know, I was praying to have good grades, my hair should grow longer, and all, you know, I would pray for the bus to come on time so I wouldn't miss something. It's like, why were those prayers answered and not this woman's prayers? And it was like someone blew out a candle.
Kemi Badenoch speaking with the BBC. To remind you, Fritzl, who was in Austria, imprisoned his daughter Elizabeth in his cellar in 1984 for 24 years, where he repeatedly raped her and had 7 children with her. He was jailed in 2009. More on the religious side with Pastor Graham Nichols in a moment, but on the political and the news side, Amanda Patel is columnist with the Daily Mail, and I understand you have a faith, Amanda. Would it ever be changed? Do you imagine you could be a Christian and not believe in God, or do they have to go hand in hand? Amanda, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. There's absolutely no such thing as a cultural Christian. That woman is a complete and utter nitwit. And all I can say is I just wish we could blow out her as the Tory leader. Forget about blowing out her faith. Honestly, she's incoherent, intellectually incoherent. She's incoherent in her faith. Of all of the terrible things that happened in the world, it was 2008 when the Fritzl case came up, right?
Yep.
So she's kind of, that was the trigger for her. All of the tragedies we have in the world all the time, for somehow this spoke to her personally. honestly, it just makes, it makes my blood boil, because, you know, if you believe in God as I do, if you have a strong faith, you know, I was in church on Sunday, as I regularly am, faith is a really hard thing. What Kemi doesn't seem to get is it's a very hard thing. It's not something that kind of, you know, puts a magic wand over your world. When my brother was dying of cancer, you know, as an adult with young children and happily married, I prayed night and day. I didn't turn my back on God because he died.
But I imagine if Kemi Bade not here, she would explore the line, if God is present, why does he allow wars? Why does he allow starvation? Why does he allow your brother to be taken in that fashion, Amanda?
Well, it's just a nonsensical argument, isn't it? Because that's the mystery of faith, is that you actually believe that you... And part of it, Nick, is about, you know, pledging every, you know, not just every Sunday, but in your own private prayers, like me and King Charles. I don't get down by my bedside to do it, but I certainly say my prayers every night. I've never prayed for straight hair, and I've never prayed for anything that wasn't, you know, really, really important. But most of all, you pray to be a better person. You pray to be someone who forgives, and that you ask for forgiveness of the things that you do wrong. I mean, she is just all over the place, this woman. I mean, honestly, you know, we have, the Tory party has one of the largest group of practicing and believing Christians of any party. And, you know, it's just another, I just think, does she not want the job anymore?
Well, let me ask you, you've been you are a supremely successful journalist, you're one of the most recognised names in the Daily Mail, you edited the Sunday Mirror, you edited the Sunday Express, but you will have had down times. How much has your faith sustained you then, Amanda?
Oh, enormously, Nick. Absolutely enormously. And you know, faith is a belief that you know, Christian faith is a belief that there is God, that there is an afterworld, that there is, and it gives the most fantastic comfort, actually. For instance, when both of my parents died 7 years ago, together, as they would have it, you know, within minutes of each other. And that was the most devastating thing, but I just knew that they were going, that their souls were going to another place, and and it's an enriching thing. I just hate to see it trivialized by the most useless leader the Tory party has ever had, and
that's not very Christian, Amanda. That's not very Christian.
Well,
is it, Amanda?
I would just have to put a you know, there's this bit in the in the service where you do a little silent prayer, and most of my friends are not believers, okay? Most of them are either atheists or agnostics or whatever. Okay. And I pray for them. And I don't even think I can... I'm not being a good Christian here. I can't even put her into my job lot of heathens. I can't.
All right, I'll leave it there. I'll let the listeners decide how Christian all of that is. Amanda Blattel, the hard-hitting columnist at the Daily Mail. Check her out on Saturday. I imagine there will be at least be something on her page about this story. Now, let's turn to the religious side. Thanks again, Amanda. Sorry. Let's turn to the religious side, to Graham Nichols, who's Director of Affinity Gospel Churches in Partnership and a pastor at Christ Church, Haywards Heath. Can you have one and not the other? Can you be a Christian and not believe in God, in your view? Good morning.
No, I don't think you can be a Christian and believe in God. I don't think it's that... I take slight issue with your previous journalist caller, that I think it is possible to be a cultural Christian in the sense that you quite like some of the trappings of Christianity, or it may be common in the culture that's kind of around you, that people are calling themselves Christians, but you don't actually have a belief yourself. And I would say Kemi Badenoch was one of those people who never really had a belief system herself. She just kind of breathed it in the air around her. And then when trouble came along, you know, like the man who built his house on the sand, it just all collapsed because she had no capability, no tools to work out, okay, what's going on with evil in the world? I mean, that particular case is horrendous, but there's lots of other evil in the world, isn't there? And
but why does God allow it to happen? I imagine Kemi Badenoch would say to you, Pastor or Graham, why does God allow it to happen?
There's absolutely a really big question about that. But in terms of the question as to whether she was cultural Christian or not, she has to have been, because Christianity does have answers to those kinds of questions in terms of the sin of Adam and Eve, in terms of our own evil hearts, in terms of God's big purposes. So there are answers to those questions.
So what is the answer as regards why God allowed Fritzl to do what Fritzl did?
The same answer to the question that God permits evil in all kinds of ways.
But
in
why?
Sometimes the bus doesn't come on time, and sometimes worse things that happen, because it's a broken world, because it's a fallen world, and no one disagrees with that. Why ultimately God permitted it to become a broken world, I don't have a clue, but I'm not God, so I can't give you an answer to that. But I can give you God, and I can give you hope. And
is the message then we must strive ever harder to ensure that we don't have Fritzels and Putins and whatever else it might be on this planet?
Well, absolutely that as well. And, you know, hopefully Christians are at the forefront of trying to prevent evil. But, of course, the question behind that question is, why are you even asking if you think it's a random world with no God? Because there's no such thing as evil. We only know evil because we know good, and we only know good because we know God. There's an assumption behind the question that actually is part of her cultural Christianity, so, that she thinks this is evil.
Okay.
Because in a random world, there is no such thing as evil.
And someone who's as close to faith as you are, Pastor, what do you view God as? A person? A presence? An image? How would you define it?
Oh, definitely as a person. A person who's Trinity.
There is a person, yeah.
But absolutely, person, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and I don't need to define God because He does it for us in the Bible, and I'm just looking at that, seeing what it says, and trying to teach other people both to understand how to get saved themselves, but also to understand how to be an influence for good, because we think good does exist.
May it continue to exist. Really enjoyed our conversation, Graham. Thank you very much, Graham Nichols, Director of Affinity Gospel Churches in partnership, Pastor at the Christ Church Haywards Heath. We will take your calls on that. Can you have one and not the other? And, of course, that eternal question, I was going to say, if God is good, God is good, right? God is good, comma. But then why does He allow Fritzels, or the suffering, starvation, or even illness? We'll explore that in the light of Kemi Badenoch's, not confession, sorry, statement is a better word. 8:15 LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
The White House has suggested Donald Trump could meet Vladimir Putin as soon as next week. The US is to impose additional tariffs on India for buying oil from Russia. And ministers have announced new measures to crack down on rogue operators providing cosmetic procedures. LBC weather, sunshine and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, dry and cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Well, these delays do continue on the M25. It is very busy anti-clockwise from junction 21 at the M1 to 19 at Watford. It was after a car broke down earlier. It's been cleared now for a while, but it's still very slow. And also delays of about half an hour on the M25 clockwise up to junction 2 at the A2. Those delays are back over the M25's QE2 bridge. The A3 is very slow southbound to Payne's Hill. That's all down to an accident. And on the trains, Elizabeth Line services remain disrupted. They're suffering with minor delays between Whitechapel and Shenfield, and that was after a signal failure earlier at Ilford.
This is LBC.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream, and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Make the O2 your playground this summer. Test your football skills at Toca Social. Take to the skies at iFly indoor skydiving. Or challenge your friends at Boom Battle Bar. Let the kids burn off energy at Oxygen Active Play. Perfect your game at Paddle Social Club. Or test your reflexes in the world of Activate. There's something for everyone at the O2. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavors from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8. What an interesting conversation we're about to have. Cultural Christianity. You can be a Christian, you don't have to believe in God, or you have to believe in God if you're a Christian. George in Wimbledon, what do you want to add to this, George? Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Hello,
yes,
sir.
Yes, I'm an atheist, and my husband is a Christian.
Yep.
But I'm from this country, and I went to a church during school.
Where'd you get married? Did you get married in a register office or in a church?
He's Lebanese. You and I have spoken a few times.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. You're the big fat gay bear, remember? Sorry.
Sorry. We had a bit of a flirtatious conversation a few years
we
ago.
We did.
I remember now.
Slightly more serious subject. Anyway, the point is, I was on the tube with my husband last year, and there was a homeless man asleep on the floor of the tube.
Oh, Lord.
And he had no shoes on. And I said to my husband, you know what, I'm going to give him my shoes. And he said, don't be so stupid, it's raining outside. And I said, and I don't believe in Jesus, I'm an atheist. I said, well, what would Jesus do? And I know that sounds very pious, and I thought, no, I'm going to give him my blood, excuse my French, I'm going to give him my shoes.
Right.
And so I took my shoes off, and everyone looked at me a bit weird, and I gave him my shoes, and we went upstairs, and my feet got wet, and I bought some new shoes.
Right.
And
right.
To me, that's
you walked into the shoe shop without any shoes?
Yes.
With wet socks and said, can I try these shoes on? I would say, well, George, you're very noble to give your shoes away, but you're going to have to try your feet first.
No, I took my socks off and I asked for some
socks. Yeah.
But the point is, I live my life as a cultural Christian because I believe that the values we're taught are so wonderful in this country. Whether or not you believe in the fantastical guy in the sky,
mm-hmm.
you know, for me, and I even saved a guy's life last year by giving him mouth-to-mouth in Wimbledon, Tube Station, while people walk by. And it's not in my nature as a cult. I wouldn't go around saying I'm a cultural Christian, but I definitely hold the same values in my life and the way I live my life.
And how much does your husband live his life by Christian teachings?
Now, he's not in the country, so I could say what I want. He is he's more materialistic than I am. He doesn't go to church.
Right.
And the first thing he said when I gave this guy mouth-to-mouth on the floor, he was a drug addict, was, oh, my God, you're going to get all these diseases. You need to go and get checked. And I was gobsmacked that was his response. Now, I'm not saying he's not a beautiful human, but
would
enter my mind. The first thing I did was, as people walked by, I got on the floor, gave him mouth-to-mouth, and he came back.
Well done to you. You know, do you think I was ever an otter?
Who told you about otters?
That got you, didn't it? That got
30,
you.
30 years ago, definitely.
30 years ago. Best wishes to your husband, George. Look, you're a very, very decent man. When I have my heart attack, I want to be sitting opposite you on the tube. Otters, by the way, is gay expressions. Late 20s to 30s. Leaner, usually hairy, often with a lot of facial hair. We'll finish there because I'd also lead you into Chubbs, Cubs, Pups and Twinks. But enough of that. Let's go back to... thanks again, George. Sulakshana is in Wimbledon. Oh, also in Wimbledon. Good Lord. Do you know George by any chance? Have you seen a man walking around without any shoes?
I haven't, unfortunately.
Well, if you do, it's George.
Well, hello to George.
Yeah, lovely lad. Lovely, lovely bloke. Smashing bloke. I love George. Right, what are you going to tell me? Are you a Christian?
I am not Christian, but I was listening to your show and I felt like I would love to speak and to that question that why God, if God is real, why does God
let
war happen?
Yes, I think I know the answer, but go ahead.
Well, we all know the answer, the God is,
come on.
If we all believe in God and we are all from different religion in this whole wide world, I think the moment God would try and do all of this and no war and anything, then we as human will start tagging him as a dictator.
Well, I think that's true, but isn't it also the fact that he allows free choice or free will? So
exactly.
It was that vile man Fritzl's idea to tie up his daughter and rape her. It's Putin's idea to send loads of young lads to death in Ukraine. It's free will, isn't it? Isn't that it, Sulakshana?
It is an absolutely free will. Us as a human being, I believe, any religion that you follow, whether it's Christianity or any other religion, it's how you lead your life at a daily basis. Whether you visit a temple or a mosque or a church,
yep.
It is a personal belief. If you go there, you feel happy.
I agree. I've had some desperately sad moments in church. Parents' funerals, brothers' funerals. I've had some extraordinary happy moments in churches. Sulakshana, thank you. Look out for George without his shoes. I'm only finishing with you, by the way, to get others involved. 8:24. Lee is in King's Lynn. Lee, what did you make of the journalist we spoke with? Very senior, very well-known journalist, and her take on Christianity. Good morning.
I think that even though it looks so modern, what she's saying or whatever, I think it's so wrong to connect religiosity, to connect that to the figure of God.
Right.
I can be extremely religious in my way and not necessarily believe that Jesus, believe in God, or believe in anything else. But I do believe in the good will. I believe in the good people. I believe in good actions, which makes me a good, I would say, Catholic or Christian or Jew, because the idea here is that you feel identified with values, you feel identified with morals, but not necessarily that you believe in those fables. You know, you believe in those stories that people would write in a book 300 years after it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, When Kemi Badenoch says that she's Christian, but she not necessarily believe in God, I truly agree with her.
You do?
Because
okay.
Why do we need to agree with a God when we have so many religions? Or how many gods do we have?
Well, I don't know how we have many religions. Of course, a lot of them track back to a central tenet, a central belief. In there being a sort of, what I said, someone who distributes divine power, let's say. Lee, thank you. Have a safe day. Let's feature some of the emails, some tweets coming in. Carl in Cheshire, if God told you what you can and can't do on a daily basis, that would make him a dictator. Well, that's very much what Sulakshana was saying just a moment ago. This from Patricia. You can believe in the rules of Christianity and the Ten Commandments, but you don't have to believe there is a greater being called God. The Ten Commandments are a good set of rules to live by. Imagine if we all followed them, the world would be a better place. Andy in Southgate, God allows suffering and evil because of his love for us. He gives us freedom, which we make wrong decisions, then there are consequences. We bring suffering on ourselves and sometimes suffer because of others. You put it far better than I just called it free will or decision making. You put it far better, Andy. Judy's in Brentwood. Judy, your reaction to this story. Good morning.
Yes, absolutely. Free will. You nailed it when you said, but God gives us free will because otherwise we wouldn't be able to love. And God
wouldn't be able to laugh.
Love.
Sorry, right.
L-O-V-E.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
We wouldn't be able to
All we need is love. Yeah.
Oh, well, we do, to be perfectly honest. And you know, yesterday I was at the end of everything. My family's situation is in the most terrible situation.
Oh, no, what's happening?
I can't tell you because it's too...
All right, okay,
I can't, because
well,
it
right.
would go out over the... I can't.
Okay, I have to apologise. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have asked.
And, no, it's okay. Well, one of my grandchildren is severely autistic, the other, and I can't tell you about the other one, but we are going through the most horrendous time.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I was there for somebody yesterday, and I said, just come and see me and I'll talk to you. I went outside the front door. There were two men standing there, and they said, hello, how are you? And I said, I can't tell. It's so terrible what's going on. And one was black, one was white. They were both Christian ministers. And they said, and they're just standing there.
Well, hang on. They would just happen to be in the street when you walked out of your house?
Yes, absolutely. And I was waiting to help this other girl who was going through a terrible...
So how did they got there? Do you think they were aware
They come by car.
No, sorry.
They come to sort of...
I don't know what I was trying to say. I wonder why they decided to be on that street in Brentwood at that time.
I think they come to see somebody down the road that I'm also helping, I wasn't expecting it.
How helpful was it, lastly, Judy?
Well, they were both of them absolutely marvellous.
Oh, lovely.
And they just prayed, and I was so grateful.
I hope it goes well. I can hear the distress in your voice. I won't push any further. I wouldn't dream of pushing any further. I just wish you and your family members well. Judy, thank you. 8:28. Charlie in Lansing. Charlie, can you be a Christian, not believe in God? What do you think? Good morning.
Good morning, Ian. Nice to speak to
Hello,
you again.
Sir.
Very quickly, I was brought up Catholic. I've done the whole thing, confirmation, first communion, I was an altar boy.
Mm.
And this is, I'm sad to say, it's the only time I'm ever going to agree with Kemi Badenoch. The thing that gets me, I respect people that believe in God. I'm an atheist now.
Mm.
Now, the thing is, when you ask the very salient question, yeah, but how would God allow this? The first lady, that Daily Mail woman, she said, oh, well, that's the wonder of faith, isn't it? I mean, took that flannel, and then the other fellow, it was...
The pastor Graham.
It was a pastor. And then he said, well, because there wouldn't be evil without good, and evil is evil, and God is good.
Yeah.
It's just a channel. They evade the question because they can't answer it, and that's what it does infuriate me. As I say, if people want to follow a religion,
you don't have your faith now. Why decided you to?
Well,
I don't want to use the word turn your back. That sounds rather. But why do you decide to lose
turn
your faith?
Back.
Yeah.
Didn't turn me back. I just, you know, because I don't want to sound patronising about it. Some fella with a white beard floating around in the clouds. I mean, unfortunately, I lost both my parents, who were staunch Catholics, used to give 50 quid a month to the Catholic Church.
Right.
And then when they went at their funeral, it was a normal Mass day. They were going to have 11 o'clock service. The Catholic Church very kindly charged 250 quid for each service, you know.
I think all churches charge. I mean, of course, it is also an off-shocking time, but... I do think most churches charge for those things, Charlie. Charlie, we'll talk again soon. I've got to get to the news headlines, but thank you. Best wishes to you. After the news...
The Met Police has vowed to tackle shop theft after a gang of 12 stole £60,000 worth of items from a supermarket within 6 weeks. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma with the exclusive.
It's 8:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
President Trump says there is a good chance he could meet his Russian and Ukrainian counterparts for peace talks very soon. It follows a trip by Mr. Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, to Moscow yesterday. The latest wave of US trade tariffs announced by Donald Trump last week have come into effect. India's tariff rate is set to rise to 50% later this month unless it stops buying Russian oil. Tougher rules are to be introduced to crack down on cosmetic procedures carried out by people with no medical training. Clinics offering treatments like fillers, Botox, and Brazilian butt lifts will need to be licensed. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland. Mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC.
With Little Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Little Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Little Plus and get a little bit more at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August, full T's and C's apply, see little.co.uk/spin.
Make your summer sizzle with a chance to win £7,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Win Plus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. Every 2 hours to I inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
What makes matchday? You know Maggie's cap is the vibe.
Mate, piking all day, every day.
Mark, the cabbie, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the games.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down the dog and duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace, he gets the chili garlic ratio spot on.
Matchday is about more than just the game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's save the conversation. We're going to hear that report from my LBC colleague Shivani Sharma about police tackling shop theft. One extraordinary story about the money taken from a leading supermarket. But let's take one more call. A lot of people want to have their say on this idea. Kemi Badenoch. By the way, of course, I should realise, if you're just joining the show, just to quickly tell you what we're talking about, she's spoken to with the BBC. She said she revealed that the case of Joseph Fritzl made her reject God. She's a Christian. She doesn't believe in God because, and I'm paraphrasing with respect to Mrs. Badenoch, God effectively allowed Joseph Fritzl, who you may recall was in Austria, imprisoned his daughter Elizabeth in a cellar for 24 years from 1984, repeatedly raping her and having seven children with her. God wouldn't have allowed it. Malachi's in Cranley. What would you say to this, Malachi? Good morning.
Good morning. I completely disagree with Kemi Badenoch's analysis of this at all. To be a Christian is to fundamentally believe in God. The two are not mutually exclusive. The reality is that the Christian religion is not just about trying to achieve some sort of enlightenment in this world. It's about reconciliation with God, a true God who wants to have a relationship with his children. And to say that, you know, you can be a Christian without that belief, I think seems to undermine the very essence of the Christian religion and the truth claims that Jesus Christ made about himself.
Sorry, Malachi, what do you say to her assertion that it's a case such as Fritzl made her question it? What would you say to her on that?
Well, I think that the reality, the sobering reality of life is that because of man's sinfulness, a lot of evil happens in this world. But the question I put to her is, well, what is it that can give her life purpose? What is it that can give meaning to all of these things that happen in life? I think without God, the violence we see just becomes utterly meaningless with no end to them. But as a Christian, I can say, well, in spite of these sufferings, ultimately a good will come because God will bring justice and avenge those who have done wickedness. I think to say that, well, because these bad stuff happened, God therefore doesn't exist, I think is ultimately, I think, to undermine the claims of Christ and to, I think, deny us of any true sense of peace because there is a loving God who does care for his people. But because God has given us a sense of freedom, a free will to do our own evilness, he will allow us to, as it were, to go to our own ends and to receive the consequences of that in a temporal sense. But ultimately, he will enact justice and bring things into a right order.
Malachi, thank you. You put your position or case so eloquently. Let's get back to some of the social media. Charlie in Ramsgate, Christians believe God allows suffering not because he is distant or indifferent, but because love requires freedom, and we live in a world that is broken and still being redeemed. Much pain comes from human choices, but even in the face of injustice or tragedy, God is not absent. I hope that makes some sense. Serena Craigie says, God gives us choices. We all as humans choose what we do, be it good or bad. If we choose evil, then there are consequences when we meet him on Judgment Day. He will punish. You cannot be Christian and not believe in God, much as Malachi was just saying. Mrs. Badenoch makes a mockery of faith when she says she does not believe in God. Well, let's not attack her personally, but we can certainly talk about her views, and we will return to that, but to other matters. And the Met, we were talking about them in the previous hour, weren't we? Well, they vowed to bring down shop theft after a gang of 12 stole 60,000 worth of items from a Tesco in North London within 6 weeks. That's £60,000 worth of items from a Tesco's in North London within 6 weeks. And LBC has had exclusive access to a Met police operation as officers are using selector DNA to catch criminals. And we were made aware of this, so thank you very much. Someone who texted in on this, so you should be aware. Well, I know sometimes you don't want to give your names, and we fully understand, but they are all red, even if they're not red on air, and if there's a story that we can follow up on, then we do, and that's exactly what we've done here, so thank you to that text. LBC's reporter, Shivani Sharma, has all the details. Shivani!
Nick, Operation Cuff started in June with the Met Police targeting violent, prolific shoplifters in North London. And none are more violent or prolific than at a large Tesco in Haringey, a known hotspot for shop theft. Now, LBC got exclusive access to one of the Met's so-called days of action, joining officers in plain clothes. And within the space of 2 to 3 hours, they stopped multiple individuals caught stealing at that Tesco. Now, Sergeant Christopher Howard, who runs Operation Cuff, has told me that huge amounts of wine bottles and Ferrero Rochers are being stolen and that criminality at this particular store had got out of control.
there is a group of approximately 12 who, are not, when we last spoke to the manager, they've stole £60,000 worth of items within a six-week period. And I believe overall, that's their HQ has said, 750 or 700,000 in the last year, and 75% of that was this group. Shopkeepers come in to do their 9-to-5, and they are constantly abused, threatened, sworn at, or worse, sometimes people pull weapons. And it depends where you are and what venue you are. This place is particularly bad. There are people who have got names, like one of their main friends called Chain Man, because he pulled a chain out and would wave it above his head.
Now, the police say gangs are stealing items from that supermarket and selling them on at a hairdresser's nearby. Officers are trying to crack down on that cycle of crime by working with supermarkets to mark store items with selector DNA, a special synthetic spray with a unique pattern for each item, making it easier to identify where items have come from and when they've been stolen. Now, Nick, I joined officers on a raid of that hairdresser's. Now, Nick, officers believe goods were moved on before they could be identified and seized at that hairdresser's, but they say they'll be back to catch them next time. And Inspector Jamie Modridge says early indications show the use of selector DNA in Operation Cuff has been a success in bringing down ShopFest in targeted areas that's been causing absolute havoc in North London and the capital more widely.
The results so far, I think, have been quite impactive. Certainly crime has reduced, but in the store behind me, by at least 50%. I think word of mouth is spreading as well amongst the individuals that we're targeting about our new approach and how we're being quite relentless and quite ruthless. We will find you, we will arrest you, and we will put you before the courts.
So as you heard there, Nick, Met officers say they'll stop at nothing to show shoplifters in North London that they will be met with the full force of the law.
Shivani Sharma reporting. And thanks again, Paul in Croydon, who sent that information about that special DNA spray, effectively. That was back in April. So we do read them all, and when we can, we turn them into stories. We might talk about that at 8:40, but we're definitely talking about Christianity. And the view of Kemi Badenoch, that she can be a Christian, but she doesn't believe in God. John's in Bloxwich. You're on the radio, John. Morning.
Morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right, sir. What's your view on what Kemi Badenoch has been saying?
It's interesting, because I have these debates and I play devil's advocate with my Christian friends in a WhatsApp group quite often. Mm. But ultimately, I think the answer is no. Can you be a Christian not believing God? I think to be a Christian, to be accepted into the Christian faith as a practicing Christian, the number one fundamental core belief you have to buy into is that Jesus Christ is our Saviour and he was resurrected and died for our sins. That's it. If you don't believe that, you are not a Christian. It's as plain as that. Now, you can be a cultural Christian. I mean, one of the most famous atheists of all time, Richard Dawkins, who's written The God Delusion, he himself even said that he believes that Christianity and religions are all nonsense in their central core beliefs in terms of what literally happened. But he himself is a cultural Christian. He enjoys going to church. He enjoys the culture. When he hears the songs being sung, he gets a warm feeling. But that does not mean that he buys into the core belief system of it. So he himself admits he's culturally Christian, but he's not himself a Christian. I mean, could you be a Muslim and not believe in Allah? I don't even think it would be entertained.
I wouldn't have thought so. I don't have enough in-depth information in Islam, but I wouldn't have thought so, John.
No, you can't. So you can't do the same with Christianity. Now, I can identify myself with being culturally Christian. I love everything about it. But where I get stuck is when we have debates about literal, metaphorical story interpretations. You know, did Jesus actually rise from the dead?
Yeah. Give me an example.
Okay, so, I mean, without going too far, I mean, my personal belief is that Jesus Christ is a metaphorical representation of our higher selves, and he was a perfect example of how to live our lives if we do want to kind of get rid of all this animalistic urges, because all these Ten Commandments are almost telling you what not to do, which is inside us all, isn't it? If it was telling you not to murder, it wouldn't be in us to begin with.
Right.
And Jesus Christ is a perfect example of how to live in that pinnacle of a higher being. So, and you could...
What would your life be, do you imagine, without your faith?
Well, I'm not a Christian. So if you were to speak to my atheist friends, they would say I am. If you were to speak to my Christian friends, they would say I'm not. But I just really enjoy debating. And I've myself got to a point where I do believe there is some sort of you know, there is an ultimate highest place you can reach, and there's a highest mode of being that you can attain. And I think all these religions try and aim towards what is, just in their own ways. And I personally think Christianity does nail it the best out of all of them, because it does. If you were to follow it truly, it would turn you into someone who acts in a righteous and a decent way.
I imagine you have a lot of healthy debates, John. Thank you. Only finishing to get others involved. One more before we give you some news update, news headlines. Martin's in Le Havre in France. Martin, your view on this conversation. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Just very quickly, just this idea that God loves us because he gives us free will, I just think is totally abhorrent. I mean, God loves us, so why has he created child cancer? Why has he created bugs that burrow into the eyes of malnourished children in Africa? Oh, but he loves us. Because do as I say, or you'll burn in hell for the rest of your life. No,
as some of my people have been, because he provides freedom, he provides decisions and choices for people to make.
What decisions and choices did people make that created these animals, that created child cancer?
Nothing, but then it is the love of the surgeons who cure the cancer when they can that we also need to look at.
But why make it in the first place?
But you're seeking, we say him, just for purpose of conversation, you're seeking to make him into a dictator then, that he controls every aspect of our lives. But that's not going to be the way.
No, controlling every act would be the Ten Commandments stuff.
But that's what you're
advocating. Creationist.
You're saying, you know, why does he allow children to starve to death in Africa? Well, he would control every aspect of our lives. We would have no free will whatsoever. And that's not how it is, I don't think, Martin.
But human free will doesn't influence the animals that exist on the diseases and the animals that exist. That's not influenced by human behaviour. That's him directly, or it, or her, or whoever.
All right, Martin, I respect your view. I want to disagree agreeably with you, and I'm grateful for your input. Thank you. We've got to get to the news headlines. You're in Le Havre, by the way, which is the other side of the channel. And a senior politician has been on the channel lately.
See a French warship, and just next to it is a dinghy full of illegal immigrants. The French making absolutely no attempt whatsoever to stop it. They've been shadowing it for the last 3 hours.
Shadowing that, and that's the shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp, who took to the high seas the day after the one-in, one-out deal was launched. What did he discover? You'll find out after this. 8:45 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
There could be face-to-face talks between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin as soon as next week. The latest round of US tariffs on dozens of countries has taken effect, and ministers have announced plans for tougher rules on cowboy cosmetic procedures. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland, mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Very busy on the M25 clockwise from Junction 3 at the M20 to 4 at Orpington. It's because a lorry has broken down and one lane is closed. Very busy on the A3 southbound from Paines Hill to the M25 junction, and that's all down to an accident where one lane is closed for recovery. In Ashford, Felton Road is partially blocked both ways. Oakfield Road, that's where a car's broken down and there are queues on the approach. The North Circular Road's very busy northbound up to the Hanger Lane gyratory, and on the trains there are still minor delays on the Elizabeth line. This is between Whitechapel and Shenfield. It was after a signal failure from earlier.
This is LBC.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're gonna do, even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Outlet shopping at the O2. Get up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Sunglass Hut, the cosmetics company store, Le Creuset, and more. Plus, why not make a day of it with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, interactive football, and more. There's so much to do at the O2 this summer.
Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search Outlet Shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes!
Georgie, is this too much guitar?
Yep, lost them. God, I offered to get drinks on my own.
It's okay, find the flag with the DJing cat. Ah, there they are. Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us.
Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Save this summer with Lidl Plus. Get 2 for £7 on burgers, jumbo sausages and more. And get 2 for £3.50 on our plant burgers, veggie sausages and more veggie classics. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T. Drop up on island fuel. R. Rest every 2 hours too. I. Inspect tire pressure and tread. P. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It has certainly got you talking. Kemi Badenoch's views that she can be a Christian, but she doesn't believe in God. It tracks back to the horrific story concerning Joseph Fritzl and the appalling inhumane acts that he perpetrated all those years ago in Austria. Shauna's in Wandsworth. Shauna, has Kemi got this right? Good morning.
Morning.
Mrs. Badenoch, sorry. Good morning.
Good morning. No, I personally don't feel she's got it right. I don't think you can believe, I don't think you can be a Christian and not believe in God. Now, I think, not everyone, but I think some people get confused with, like, believing in God as a religion. Now, I think religion and believing in God is two different things. I think religion, it could be anything you want it to be. I mean, you could religiously brush your teeth every morning. It doesn't mean that,
would you religiously... that bit I don't understand.
Okay, so, for instance, I put religion down to doing something every day that is passionate to you and what you want to do.
That could be stealing from shops.
Yeah, I mean, if someone does it religiously, then...
I think, does it not have to follow some of the teachings of God if it's going to be deemed to be religious? It doesn't have to be prayer. It might be giving your shoes up to someone who hasn't got any shoes. It might just be helping your fellow man or woman. I don't think it can be something such as, I don't know, brushing your teeth or playing video games. I don't think that's going to get it, is it?
No.
Right.
What I'm trying to say is that I generally believe that believing in God is one thing, but I do believe sometimes religion plays a part in control, almost. It's almost like a form of control. And I just feel like God is love. So I feel like the two kind of intertwine with each other.
Sometimes, well, let me ask you, so Mrs. Badenoch says she is a Christian but doesn't believe in God. Might I ask you the same question?
Am I a Christian?
Yes.
I would say I wouldn't say I'm a Christian in the sense that I go to church every, religiously go to church every weekend, but I do believe in God, yeah. And I do believe, I wanted to come to what the person was saying, like, if God is real, then why do all of these things happen?
Well, that's something we've talked about. This, of course, freedom, or otherwise he, she, they are a dictator. Shauna, thank you. I have to go because there's an important interview I come to get to. I wish you a happy, safe day and good luck with your faith as you practice it, however that might be. Now, back to the conversation which we started the show, beginning of the first hour, which is what is rapidly unravelling as a French farce. The one-in, one-out deal that won't hold water, ha 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 ha, because if they claim that they might face religious persecution, they will be afforded all the protections of human rights laws. And within 24 hours of it being lauded as a product of grown-up diplomacy, that was Yvette Cooper, or constructive conversations, as the Prime Minister told us, what was the reality of the one-in, one-out deal on the high seas? One politician, Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp, decided to find out.
So the government announced yesterday they had a new deal with France, supposed to stop boats crossing the channel, so I thought I'd come out here and see what's going on. I'm on the English Channel, probably about 7 or 8 miles off Calais, and behind me you can see a French warship, and just next to it is a dinghy full of illegal immigrants. The French making absolutely no attempt whatsoever to stop it. They've been shadowing it for the last 3 hours. It's about 2 hours from British waters. They're going to be arriving in the UK later on today. So quite clearly, the government's claims to be fixing this with their new deal are not working. The evidence is right behind me on the English Channel, and the French doing absolutely nothing whatsoever to stop that boat.
Safely back on dry land, Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp joins me now. Of course, the reality is, Mr. Philp, if I'd taken to the waters, say, 15 months ago, we'd have witnessed exactly the same scenes, wouldn't we? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, of course, in 2023, the last government's last full year, they actually got the migrant numbers down by 30%, and there was a plan ready to go then to deport all illegal arrivals back to their country of origin or to Rwanda, which went through a bunch of challenges. We had to pass a new law, but that was ready to go by July last year.
How many people could we have sent to Rwanda? What was the number that you were looking at?
Well, there was no cap on the scheme, but the point, the critical point people don't understand is that if you remove all or pretty much all of the illegal arrivals within a matter of 2 or 3 months, people just stop attempting the crossing entirely, because why would you if you're going to wind up in Rwanda? And when Australia tried something similar 12, 13 years ago, they only actually had to remove about 3,000 people who tried to cross to Australia. And then it just stopped completely because people just stopped making the attempt. Right. So that obviously common sense tells you if you know you're going to wind up in Rwanda or it was a little island in the case of Australia, you're not going to bother attempting the crossing.
I mean, we'll talk about what you witnessed this week, but just to come back to that, I mean, Rwanda suggested it was accept around 1,000 asylum seekers. So there might not have been a preset cap, but those were the indications from the Rwandan authorities. And weren't we going to take one back? It's sort of one in, one out with Rwanda. Wasn't that the reality?
There was no one in, one out with Rwanda, and there wasn't a cap on that scheme. My assessment is that within, just like Australia, within 2 or 3 months of returning or removing everybody who crosses the channel, it will just stop entirely. That was the experience in Australia. You wouldn't have to take 50,000 people to Rwanda. You would just have to take everybody for the first 2 or 3 months. Then it would stop. Now, the problem with the government's deal...
Well, that's what I want to bring you up to the day before yesterday. How long were you on the waters? How many French naval vessels did you see? How many dinghies did you see? How many people on each dinghy? Were they mostly male? Give almost a journalistic report, if you would, Mr. Phil.
Yeah, so I set off from Dover at 7 o'clock yesterday morning, sailed across to Calais, which took about an hour and a half on a fishing boat, observed the French coast very quickly. We saw two migrant dinghies who had departed from the French coast heading towards UK waters. They were stuffed full of people. There were about 70 to 80 on each of those two boats. They were almost entirely young men, and they were being escorted by two different French warships who were basically ushering them away from the French shore and towards UK waters. Those French boats could have stopped the dinghies near the French coast, which is what the Belgians do, but they chose not to do that. They ushered them into the shipping lanes. I saw a big tanker, big sort of cargo ship, had to change course at the last minute to avoid hitting the dinghy. When the French had ushered them all the way to the UK, just inside UK waters, the border force came and picked up the illegal immigrants and gave them a taxi service to Dover. And I then watched them get off the boat in Dover. But to add insult to injury, I also caught the French commander on the ship radio asking border force to return all of the life jackets which they had handed out so they could reuse them to facilitate even more illegal arrivals in the future. So what was clear is that for those two dinghies full of people yesterday, there was no deterrent effect whatsoever, because they knew that under the Labour government's deal, which came into force yesterday, only 6% of people on that dinghy stand to get returned. 94% get to stay in the UK. And if you've got a 94% chance of staying, that's not really a deterrent at all. And that's why I think I saw those dinghies crossing yesterday.
Mr. Phil, when you were close to the French coast, were you able to see whether any efforts were made by the gendarmes or the equivalent of French border force to try and stop the dinghies or indeed to slash them with knives in shallower water?
So we weren't close enough to the embarkation point to see that. But we do know that, generally speaking, the French don't intervene very much on the coast. There was that one case where they slashed a dinghy a few weeks ago, but that seems to have been a one-off. And talking to journalists who have spent quite a lot of time on the French coast around Dunkirk and Calais and a place called Gravelines, where many of the embarkations take place, very often the French police don't do anything. And in fact, apparently lots of the illegal migrants use French buses, like local authority buses, which are free apparently, to get to the beaches, and the bus drivers just let them on, and they're literally ferrying them on buses towards the beaches, to the point that local people in Calais and Dunkirk like don't use these buses anymore because they're being used by all the illegal migrants.
Got to get to news in a moment. Finally, the hours you spent on in the channel, what's your overriding impression, Mr. Phil?
My overriding impression is that Labour has lost control of our borders. This year so far has been the worst year in history for crossings. The French are doing very little to stop this. In fact, they're actually facilitating it by ushering and escorting these boats across. I saw these boats full of young men. I saw no women and children. And it's quite clear to me that Labour does not have control of our borders.
Grateful for your time, Conservative MP, Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp, explaining what he saw. Then we music means we move on. We might return to that conversation, but definitely coming up, the end of the line for the Cosmetic Cowboys. Ashton Collins is from Save Face, a government-approved register of accredited practitioners. She told LBC,
you have people with no healthcare experience, often using unlicensed products that they buy from places like China and Korea, and they administer them in places like Airbnbs.
Questions for Labour's Minister for Homelessness to answer after she ejects her tenants so she can put the rent up, and the scheme to clamp down on football hooliganism even. They will be sprayed by a special DNA mist, but how exactly will it work? Those stories and more after the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, President Trump says there is a good chance he could meet Vladimir Putin for Ukraine peace talks very soon. It follows a trip by Mr. Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, to Moscow yesterday. He described them as productive but not a breakthrough. LBC's Washington correspondent, Simon Marks, says the talks could take place in the coming weeks.
We think it's possible that that meeting might take place in Istanbul, might take place in Riyadh, but we don't know critical answers to vital questions. Has Donald Trump agreed to talks without preconditions? How is he going to make sure that he doesn't get, as he's put it before, tapped along by the Russian President Vladimir Putin?
The latest wave of US trade tariffs has taken effect. Donald Trump announced the new tax rates on dozens of countries last week. India's tariff rate is set to rise to 50% from later this month, unless it stops buying Russian oil. The Home Office says the first people have been detained as part of a new migration deal with France. They have been placed in a removal centre after arriving on a small boat yesterday and are expected to be sent back to France within weeks. Ministers say the policy strikes at the heart of the smugglers' business model. A health minister's told Nick there can be no more cowboys providing cosmetic treatments. New rules are to be introduced to crack down on unregulated procedures being carried out in homes, hotels and pop-up clinics. Figures seen by LBC show hundreds of people have been maimed by botched fillers and Botox. Karen Smith is the secondary care minister.
These are our bodies. They are our most precious thing that we have. So if it's cheap and it looks too good to be true, it probably is. So I think there is the awareness raising to say, look, you need to really check on this. If it's too cheap, it's probably not good.
Analysis has found around a quarter of councils in England could lose money under proposed reforms to how they're funded. The IFS says the changes would create big winners and losers, with some in line for a 12% real terms cut. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 91.40. That's down 23. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland, mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere with a high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This is Go.Compare FM reporting from Savvy Street, where mysterious moustaches are appearing on residents' faces. So, your tash, where did it come from?
I was sorting out my car insurance at Go.Compare and it appeared out of nowhere.
Madam, your moustache is magnificent.
I packed a great deal on home insurance and this Savvy Tash grew on me.
And resident cat, your whiskers have gone from meh to marvellous. How? Could have explained your pet insurance deal better myself. Britain, get in on the tash action. Be savvy. Feel the deal at Go.Compare.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Bonjour, 3 minutes after nine on Thursday, the 7th of August. It's a crackdown on cosmetic cowboys or an end of the Botox butchers. Or even the Botox botchers, I suppose. Whichever you prefer, tougher restrictions for what's called the Wild West of cosmetic surgery. Have you or someone you love or someone you know been a victim? It's not immediate, by the way, so you still need to be very vigilant. And without being too crude of this out, why would you want a Brazilian butt lift? What is the appeal? I don't get it. Plus, the Labour's Minister for Homelessness being asked to answer questions as to why she chose to eject her tenants, legally, and then put up the rent. Surely that's a question she has to answer as to her professional capabilities. And as the season is about to, or in some divisions, has kicked off... it's all over, or it could be. The police plan to tag hooligans with an invisible DNA spray. But how exactly will it work? Stay tuned later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
We can give you all sorts of cover names because it's, I can imagine, particularly, I was going to say for a woman, or for anybody really, but if you've had this butt lift, presumably, is it just women? Do men have butt lifts? I genuinely don't know. I've had some dental work, but I've not had any of this thing done. I've never had Botox. I just don't know. I'm sure blokes have Botox. But, you know, if you did have your butt lift and unfortunately didn't quite get off the ground floor, just about managed to get to the mezzanine level with your butt lift, we can give you a different name, put you in a totally different area, so don't worry about that. Because it's all important to hear your personal stories, isn't it? But as we told you, and as you've heard on the LBC News Bulletin, this crackdown has been announced. Now, this has a very sinister, if not fatal, touch, in that someone has actually died as a result, just almost a year after Alice Webb, who was 33, became the first person to die in this country following what's called a liquid Brazilian bum lift. How does it work? What does it do? A liquid Brazilian... her partner tells the Daily Mirror, I reference the paper because they've done a lot of campaigning, we're finally seeing the government take meaningful action to protect others from the same tragedy. Now, by its very nature, we don't have numbers for how many people have been affected by that. What we do have a sense of, and also how many practitioners there are, because they don't have to register. But the government is working to figures of between 100 and 200,000 aesthetic, what are called aesthetic practitioners operating around the land, some of whom will have qualifications, none of whom require any qualifications. This is something I explored with the Minister for Secondary Care, Karen Smith, who explained why the government is taking this action.
Used to be the preserve of A-listers, and now it's available to many. But, and I think it's a surprise to many that it's not regulated. We've had some tragic examples that listeners will be aware of. There was a consultation started under the last government. They also put in place the ability to bring in regulations. We have now analysed the results of that consultation, worked with the industry on that, and today we are issuing our response, which people can look at in detail, but is saying no more cowboys. We want to make this industry safe. We want to support the industry. We want to work with them to make it safe and also bring in the regulations that under 18s can't be treated with these procedures either. So there's a lot to do. It's a complex area to get that balance, and you'll be aware, Nick and viewers, that the regulation is a complex area between supporting industry and keeping safe, but that's what we're progressing on.
So how would my listeners ensure that if they wanted to avail themselves of lip fillers, Botox or a Brazilian bum lift, that they're going to a recognised registered practitioner? What do they need to do, Minister?
Well, at the moment, it's not as clear. It's not clear. I mean,
generally, when do we hope that clarity might be forthcoming?
Well, that's what we are now going to start bringing in, and it will take time to get it right. But there is guidance available on the NHS website. It's a bit like most of our lives. You know, these are our bodies. They are our most precious thing that we have. So if it's cheap and it looks too good to be true, it probably is. So I think there is the awareness raising that, as you say, the Mirror and other people have done, and to say, look, you need to really check on this. If it's too cheap, it's probably not good. Check the environment you're working in. There are a lot of really good practitioners out there, a lot of very good premises out there to be safe in.
To clarify, there's still time off. The registration system is still some weeks or months away. So, listeners, everyone still has to be very vigilant. Is that what we're saying, Minister?
That's right. It will take time to get it right.
When do you hope it would be in place?
I can't put a date on that at the moment. We want to work with the industry to get it right in the consultation. There is areas to be decided about what exact procedures go into which category. The priority is these butt lifts and what's called red list procedures.
Sorry, you've got to help me. What's a red list procedure, Minister?
Well, I appreciate people might be having their breakfast, but generally it's around areas we call intimate areas of the body. Shall I say that?
Right.
And people can look at that around.
I had no idea I was leading you down that path. I apologise.
I'll stop there for your viewers.
Right.
So they're very clear. They're on the cons. People can look them up around some of which have led to some tragic events. And I'm speaking to you from Southwood, where the clinicians, the NHS, are also very keen to have this sorted because they see the dreadful consequences of some of these procedures. So work with the Care Quality Commission, who work with us all the time on making sure premises are safe. We've got them on board to work with us on these red list procedures and then look at the others. But be vigilant, yes.
Okay.
We want to work with everybody to support women in these industries.
Minister for Secondary Care, Karen Smith. Now, let's get a real story. Put the meat on the bones, as it were, and bring into the conversation Danny in Llandilo, who is a victim of a cosmetic procedure. Danny, thank you for coming on the phone. How are you today? Let's start with important things. How are you feeling, Danny?
Yeah, not too bad. Enjoying this miserable weather.
Oh, is it miserable down in... which part of Wales are you, in north or south?
South
west
edge of the Brecon Beacons.
Oh, okay. We're in a lovely part of the world. So, how many years are we going back? What did you decide you wanted? I'm sure you're a stunning-looking young woman, but you decided you wanted to have a go at something, did you?
Yeah, so I've got, it's only a year ago, just over a year ago, and I've got one eyebrow that kind of does a crazy thing. It does the same thing. One that's quite flat and one that does the same thing.
Wow.
which is why I wanted to hold it still in place. So
it's quite wobbly or something, is it? Is that what we described?
It's expressive.
Oh, what a lovely
it's got
word.
Personality.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so I went, I thought the reason I'd share this is because I found out some interesting things I think people should be aware of. Mm. Otherwise, I probably would have stayed quiet.
Right.
I went for a microblading appointment for my eyebrows, which is essentially an eyebrow semi-permanent makeup tattoo.
Okay.
It's just to fill in your eyebrows if they're a bit thin or a bit sparse.
Okay. Yes. How did you find the clinic, the person, what research did you do before you went to the place that did it?
I read the reviews. Unfortunately, I didn't do enough research.
Right.
But I did read the reviews, and I thought that she would be a reputable person. She seemed so, and she seemed like a lovely lady when I met her.
Right, right. What happened?
Well, she did the eyebrows.
What's it called again? Micro? What did you say? Micro?
Yeah, microblading or micropigmentation.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so what does that involve then? How painful was it?
It's a little bit sore.
Right.
You put cream on it.
Right. And what's she doing? Like you see a tattoo, almost like a pen. Is that how she's doing it?
It is, but I don't think it's quite as painful as a tattoo itself.
Right. So
no, it is like a
she starts doing the microblading. What happens next?
So that went okay. But then afterwards, she did the first of two Botox procedures that I paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so painful. Oh, my goodness, it was so painful. I've had it before. It doesn't hurt.
Where did you have the Botox injected? In your face, I assume?
Yeah, so to keep my eyebrow down and just to keep like, lines at bay.
Right.
So, yeah, and it was horrible, honestly. I had tears in my eyes. I was in shock. When she finished, I just wanted to get out of there. I've got to go immediately.
Right.
But she wouldn't let me. She made me sign a few things first. Goodness knows what they were, because I was in shock. I went home. In hindsight, I probably shouldn't have driven. I don't even remember the drive home.
Good Lord. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so that settled down anyway. But the next day, I thought, I'm really worried. I feel like my eyelid is going to close. My eyebrow is going to drop.
Yeah, God.
That was probably psychosomatic, to be honest, because I knew what went on the day before wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
But I called her and I told her about my worries. And she said, well, send me a picture, which is ridiculous, because Botox doesn't take effect for days afterwards.
Right.
So you wouldn't see a difference.
Right.
But I said, I'm worried about it. And she just fobbed me off anyway. So I went to another practitioner and I said, I'm really worried. This is what's happened. What can I do?
Yeah.
And they said, if you get your prescription and the worst happens, we'll be able to help you.
Well, sorry, so if the worst happens, what's the worst?
So the worst for me, or that I know of, would have been my eyebrow would have dropped or my eyelid would have closed for 18 months, up to 18 months. So obviously I don't want that. I can't hide away for 18 months. I need to go to work.
Yeah, of course.
So I went back to her and I said, look, can I please have my prescription? Mm. She said, okay. She never sent it to me. I messaged her over and over and over asking to see my prescription.
Oh, my goodness.
Which the other practitioner was... she was 100% certain that she had to give to me.
Yeah.
She never gave it to me, not once. So I went to Save Face and they investigated her.
So Save Face is the list of accredited practitioners, just to explain what Save Face is. On you go, Danny.
Yeah. So I went to Save Face and they investigated and they came back and said, I'm really sorry, but she's not a prescriber. So she could not prescribe the Botox.
It. Right, I see.
You have to... I mean, I don't think you have to have the qualifications to inject, but you do have to be a prescriber to get the Botox in the first place.
How are you now?
I'm annoyed. I'm really annoyed. I'm annoyed that a year later I still can't see my prescription. The ICO wouldn't allow me to see my prescription. The credit card company, they dismissed the fact that she sent a false invoice in. And I feel like every step of the way, every time there was that we could have got some justice or had to take some accountability for it.
Yeah.
And I'm really frustrated about it.
Are you happy with the microblading?
Oh, no, it was awful, but
that's
it doesn't feel as serious.
And your face now, is your face has returned to how it was prior to the Botox?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really take, because obviously I only had the first set of injections, so...
I see. Do you think this register will work, Danny? Do you think this register will work?
I don't know. I don't have much hope for it. But listening to the minister on the show earlier, I just thought, well, it doesn't sound like she even knows what's going to happen.
Okay.
So why are you announcing things if you don't know?
Will you have procedures again?
Probably, because like I say, I've done it before, and it's always been good, but I will not ever just believe someone when they tell me they're a doctor. I'll be checking.
Look after yourself, Danny. Thank you for sharing so much. Be well. We'll take your calls, obviously give you different names and ask whether this will work. And someone who's got a question about their place in work, the homelessness minister for Labour, who's ejected her tenants so she could put up the rent. How real is that in the world of rental? How difficult is it? 9:16 now, just turned. LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
President Trump has raised the prospect of face-to-face talks with Vladimir Putin as soon as next week. The Home Office says the first people have been detained as part of a new migration deal with France. And ministers have announced new rules to crack down on cowboys providing cosmetic treatments. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland, dry and cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays of about half an hour on the M25 clockwise from Junction 3 at the M20 to 4 at Orpington. It's because a lorry's broken down and one lane is closed. In Ashford, Felton Road is partially blocked both ways at Oakfield Road, and that's where a car's broken down. Battersea Bridge is very busy northbound, and that's because of the ongoing works. On the trains, well, much better news for the Elizabeth line. Those delays between Whitechapel and Shenfield have now cleared, but also there are delays for South Eastern. They're delayed to and from Charing Cross, and that's all down to a signal failure.
This is LBC.
What makes match day? You know Maggie's cafe is the vibe.
Mate, piking all day, every day.
Mark, the cabbie, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the game.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down a dog and duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace, he gets the chili garlic ratio spot on.
Match day is about more than just the game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and stay with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2023 and 2024, we provided £8.8 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Aware that a lot of you and the number of people there is, it is a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar, a billion-pound, what about dollars, billion-pound business, cosmetic surgery. What I would say, and I'm not the sort of person who's going to go for a Brazilian butt lift or Botox, but this register, by the government's own admission, look, credit to them, they are doing something. They want to stop this, not least because someone lost their life, poor woman. But it's not in yet. So the watchword is, and the word I use that the minister supported, you've still got to be vigilant, do all the checks. So if you're thinking, maybe you're off today to have some Botox, make sure they are an accredited practitioner and that you will at least have that degree of comfort. So check out Save Face. Two words, save face. Jenny's in Horsham. Jenny, how concerned are you that this might not actually quite get where it wants to with the legislation? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. I think the problem with changes like this is they can give people a false sense of security.
Yeah,
so as you just said, we all need to be responsible and check out a practitioner, check the prescription, etc., etc., particularly for Botox, which is a prescription item. And I've experienced, had different experiences where dentists are giving fillers and nurses are giving fillers.
Sorry, dentists are giving fillers, not fillings, fillers.
Fillers. So it's Good a Lord. Thing now when in their droves, dentists and nurses go and pay £4,000 for a three-day course, and they can then go and give fillers. And obviously, they can do the prescriptions,
and
Botox,
fillers, is this
cetera.
Where people have them in their cheeks and things like that? Is that where you put fillers? And is this also in your bottom? Is that where it goes as well?
Well, I actually don't know anything about that.
Okay, all right. Okay.
But my point mainly is that those people aren't necessarily any good at it either. And I think if you look at statistics, it's a bit like looking at NHS statistics to see how many botched operations there are. When we look at figures in isolation, unlicensed practitioners, it will people will think, well, if I go to a licensed practitioner, I'll be okay. But no, you still have to, whether it's a doctor or a dentist or a nurse, you still have to be vigilant. You know, we've got the NHS. That lady should have gone straight to her GP. I know what I would have done. I wouldn't have got in my car and driven afterwards either. I mean,
well, I think
people
she
are going to be stupid.
Rue the decision
we can't.
Yes.
Yeah, but the point is, there are many people practicing who have 20 plus years experience who do undertake, albeit a small amount, of. It's not medical training, but you do have to go through a module which teaches you about, for example, the face and so on. But, you know, it has to still come down to the individual. And this is not, all this is going to do is people who've spent thousands of pounds on training is going to put them out of business. And as I say, I know which I'd rather go to. I've been to doctors, I've been to dentists, I've been to nurses. And they're not spending all their day doing these procedures because they're filling people's teeth. And then the next minute they'll go and do an hour in the evening and do fillers. And you don't get a very good result.
Thank you, Jenny. Of course, I don't think Botox, if someone chooses to have it, I don't think it's available in the NHS. I would be surprised. So you do have to go to the practitioner. Of course, you have to know that they can actually do it. Jenny, thank you for your view. Dave's in Connors Quay. Good morning, Dave.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing? You okay?
Yes, I'm good, because I don't expect to have my butt lifted, so I'm not too nervous about it. But if I were, I'd be concerned, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I was just ringing just to see, you know, why can't there be some sort of governing body very similar to how electricians or gas engineers work? You know, they both have to be registered. Gas engineer would have to be registered by GasSafe, or an electrician would have to be registered by NIC or NAPIT.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. That's what they're going to do. So right. There will be, you've nailed it, because they will ultimately have to register with the Care Quality Commission, which is the thing that literally looks at the provision of care homes and all sorts of it. So, but currently, so that's what the government is going to do, but the register isn't in place yet. Do you think it'll work then, Dave? Does it work? You're in an industry. Are you an electrician or something like that?
That's right. I'm an electrician. So basically, when you're registered with the likes of NAPIT or NIC, you get reviewed every year, and they basically check to make sure that all your insurances are in place and all your qualifications are relevant to what you're doing. So it makes 100% sense to me that the same thing is done in this sort of industry.
How do they check you up? Do they actually come and watch you at work, or do you have to do a sort of test case for them? How do they check you?
Yeah, so the likes of electricians, you'll have the likes of NAPIT or NIC come out. They'll arrange a meeting with yourself, and they'll check your qualifications and check that all your insurances are up to scratch and in place. And that's basically it. But, you know, a lot of the time, that's all it takes. And they're quite happy with that.
Well said, Dave. Thank you. More calls coming in on this. Have a safe day, Dave. But I want to, and good luck with your Sparks work, I want to come back to a conversation I discussed in the first hour, and a rather ugly look for a key Labour minister. I speak of Labour's homelessness minister, Rushanara Ali, who kicked out four tenants from her East London townhouse, then relisted the property for £700 a month more in rent. This is an exclusive story in the I newspaper. Now, just weeks after they'd left, the house that was managed by the estate agents, as I say, went up for £4,000 a month. Also, at the time of ending the tenant's contract, the firm was tempted to charge the outgoing tenants nearly £2,000 for the house to be repainted and £395 for professional cleaning. Now, if you've listened to me for some time, you'll know that normally, in most cases, not all, I'm quite a defender of those who rent out properties, because 65% of them, 65% of rentals, it's where people own two or fewer properties, so they're not all these rapacious landlords. But how real is this if you are in the rental market? Because this is, for me, indefensible just on any level. I don't rent out properties, but the idea that I would boot some tenants out, ask them to repaint it, or attempt to ask them to repaint it, and to put in professional cleaners, and then hike the rent up by £700 is madder. The fact that you're the homelessness minister, Well, this is something that I discussed with one of her fellow ministers, who is not involved in this at all, but is, of course, part of the government as well. Secondary Care Minister Karen Smith.
I'm not across the details of all of that story, but I understand Rushanara has said that she's absolutely complied with all legal requirements, which is what one would expect of
a good look,
government
though,
minister,
is it, minister
and someone experienced. Well, I can't comment on the details of that, but she has complied with the legal requirements. I mean, our renters' rights bill is very
minister,
clear.
And she ejected tenants from a property she owns so she could hike up the rent. What does that say of her and her view of her brief? Job.
I don't know the details of that. I
but
know
what,
that
what
she has complied with. Well, I
know,
need to know that she complies with the law and that we are, as a government, absolutely working on private rented sector is a hugely important sector. I'm here speaking to you from Bristol. It's where, you know, we've had to do lots of work on, and that's what our Renters' Rights Bill has brought forward to protect tenants, to make sure that they do have those rights. And I know
the firm
that
she used
I understand
tried to
that
charge
she has
tenants £2,000 for the house to be repainted, £395 for professional cleaning. This is the homelessness minister, minister.
And I hear that, but I can't comment any more than that, any more than I've been told this morning, as what that she has absolutely complied with all legal requirements, all right, as one would expect her to do.
So all these laws that were brought in by the current administration and Michael Gove, the previous administration, were going to protect renters' rights. Well, what protection were there here? By the way, please don't think I am for one moment on the side of people who rent properties, refuse to pay the rent and you can't get them out and you have to get it called a Section 22 or something. I can't remember now. Eviction 22. There's definitely 22 in there somewhere. I am not on their side at all. And I thought the law was ridiculously slanted against the landlord, or landlady, I suppose, in this instance, ridiculously slanted against them. But not in this case. These people have just been booted out and up goes the rent. What is the reality? We'll take your calls on that. Michael's in New Cross about this cosmetic cowboy clampdown. Lots of C's there. Is it going to work?
Nick, it will never, ever work.
Oh, Lord.
And why is it that these ladies have to go for themselves? Some of them
Well, they want to... I'm sure they all look beautiful. They want to make themselves look even more attractive.
But they before, they see the girls with the big lips and the big eyebrows. They just look awful. Look like dollies.
Well, they think they look good, so that's all right. We have to make sure they're safe, don't we? What do you think?
It should be banned. I think it should be totally, totally banned. And again, Labour...
Sorry, what should be banned? You'd ban Botox?
Totally ban it. Totally ban it. It's not right. It should not should be happening.
What, you have no... But someone... Hang on a second. Look, Michael, someone who genuinely has emotional health issues because they have a big nose, or they have sticky-out ears, or they have crooked teeth... You're not going to say we can't help them with that, are you?
That's different. That's totally different.
So what is it you're seeking to ban? What is it you're seeking to ban?
Seeking to ban to do it just for vanity's sake. Why don't just for vanity's sake? Some of these girls have, you see them with the big lips out of the street, I see them. But you can see in their face, they look beautiful without that lip. They're beautiful as before. Why are they making it even worse by making them bigger? And you can see in their face, they look depressed and not too happy about it because they're just like caricatures of themselves.
There are a couple of high-profile models or TV personalities who I won't name because they're not here to defend themselves, but we all know of whom I speak, and I think they look ridiculous. Michael, thank you. Strong views. We will continue this conversation. I want to hear the reality on the rental market with the actions of that homeless minister. And also, as I know some divisions it has already, but the football season kicks off in earnest. Think it's all over? Well, football hooliganism could be now, as a DNA tagging spray will be used by police on football supporters to prevent disorder. But what happens if you accidentally get sprayed? Are you going to be with a mark of Cain? How long for? We'll give you all the details after this. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The Home Office says the first migrant detentions have been made under the one-out, one-in, one-out deal with France. They were held after arriving on a small boat yesterday. Officials say they will be removed to France in the coming weeks. Reports in Russia say Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin could hold a meeting on Ukraine in the coming days. It follows the US special envoy Steve Witkoff's trip to Moscow for talks with the Russian leader. People with no medical training are to be banned from carrying out invasive cosmetic procedures under government plans. Figures suggest hundreds of women have been left maimed by unregulated treatments in recent years. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland, mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
This is LBC.
You know, Kayak isn't just another flight comparison app. When you download the Kayak app, you download flight enlightenment. With Kayak, you see things others can't, like the latest great deals from both airlines and booking sites. You can filter your searches and set up price alerts so you... Not now.
Oh, sorry.
So you're notified when there's a price drop on the flights you want. See more, do more, save more with Kayak. You can do the gong now. Download the Kayak app today and go see for yourself.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Appreciate that some of your teams have kicked off already, those who, that have survived. Others, there's a big kick-off over the next few days, isn't there, through the weekend? And then I think all divisions are pretty much in action. So what do we make of the idea of a DNA tagging spray could be used by police on football supporters to prevent disorder? It's called Selectar DNA. We're going to be speaking with a senior representative in a moment. Selectar DNA. This actually has shades of the story that my LBC colleague Shivani Sharma did, if you remember the police operation up in North London, with the amount of thieving going on from that supermarket. Anyway, it marks the skin and clothing with an invisible solution that can remain present for months and shows up under UV ultraviolet light, therefore providing forensic evidence to link individuals to a specific crime or event. The rollout will begin on Saturday at Crewe's opening home game of the season against Accrington Stanley. And this comes less than a month after the latest football disorder statistics showed an 18% lift in the number of matches with reported incidents across England and Wales. I'm afraid I don't have figures for Scotland. I sense that possibly they're having issues as well. Isn't that because when I first started to go to football games, there was ugly, ugly hooliganism. And I saw it kick off a few times. And police very bravely having to wade in and break people up. And it's so bizarre, isn't it? Group of fans from one side of a city or a town loathe the other simply because of the football team, and they're prepared to punch each other. It's remarkable. So we've got a growing problem. Hooliganism seems to be returning of a sort, 18% up. Will this work? Well, I mentioned Selectar DNA. Nick Roach is police liaison officer and joins me now. Thanks for coming on, Mr. Roach. How does it work? What's it made of? How is it to be applied? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Apologies for the background noise. I'm on a railway station in Scotland, so hopefully you can hear me.
Go ahead.
So it's a spray. I don't really want to talk too much about what's in it.
Right.
But as you said in your opening part there, that it will identify people post event. And the idea is, and you spoke then about police officers having to wade in. This will provide a solution when they can't do that or when it's impossible to do that. So somebody can be sprayed and be identified sometime later.
I guess the concern, Nick, is how targeted is it? Because if I happen to be walking past and I'm not involved in any way, shape or form of the affray, indeed I'm trying to get the heck out of there, it could hit me on the back or whatever and I'm marked for however long.
No, it's a very targeted device. I'm not going to say that you won't get somebody, there won't be a sort of a splashback, but the way that it could be read afterwards would indicate, well, that piece is on your back. That is such a small amount. You're a bystander, whereas on this clothing or this individual, there's a very large amount, thus proving that they were there. And of course, this is going to be used in along with other evidence. And it's, football grounds are sort of filled with CCTV cameras. Officers are using body cam.
Yeah.
So it's just the kind of an extra layer of evidence.
How long does it stay present on your skin? How long does it stay present on your clothing? Is it roughly the same duration?
Again, that's something I don't really want to talk about because we don't want people knowing. But what I will say is it lasts a lot longer than you might think it would.
So I get my sweater sprayed and I put it on a long wash, 120 minutes at 80 degrees. Is it going to wash out, Nick?
No.
And
I think I can be honest there. No, it's not going to. Not.
And then it needs UV light to identify it, right?
It does, but we can also detect it with dogs. We're the only forensic marking company in the world that can find our product with dogs. So it could be that you could be picked up by a dog or sometime afterwards. Or if a search was done, and one of our search dogs was there, it would cut the time of that search down hugely because we're looking at one piece of clothing in maybe a multi-occupied house. With officers and UV lights, you're going to literally need to look at everything, turn everything over. But with a dog sees with its nose, and it can hone in and say, well, there's nothing in here, but there is something in that cupboard I'm interested in.
We went in a related story in the previous hour. One of my colleagues went up to a supermarket in North London, Tesco's, where they've lost £60,000 worth of goods in 6 weeks. 6 weeks, yes, 6 weeks. And I think it's your product again. So there are other applications for selector DNA, Nick.
We do a range of products. The one that you're referring to is very similar to the one that's going to be used by the police in football situations.
And that's the same. So rather than try and confront these people who are nicking stuff from the shops, they get sprayed and then it's up to the authorities to track them down effectively.
Within the shoplifting scenario, it's about marking goods. It's about so the police will find, I'm a retired police officer, they will often find loads and loads and loads of an item. I was in a car boot sale when I helped the police take 90 bottles of extra virgin olive oil out of a van. They are highly likely to be stolen, but the problem is nobody knows where they're from. And if they'd been marked,
I was going to say workmen, these workmen and workwomen who have their drills and their Kango hammers and goodness, their chainsaws nicked. We should spray all of those, and then you go to the nearest boot sale and you can say, there's my chainsaw.
Yeah, well, we do mark an awful lot of tools. We work with a lot of sort of organisations who are sort of helping tradesmen. We just need more and more tools marked.
Right.
At that event, along with some police officers, we went through with UV lights. Our dog wasn't available on that day. We went through 4,500 pieces of equipment, and only 4 of those 4,500 were marked. Now, they weren't marked with a forensic product.
You're right.
They had names on. So I think there were two saws. One had Dave. One had Gary on.
Right.
Great on site. Proves it's yours. Doesn't and it's not mine.
Yeah.
But when you've got to go back and look through 44 police forces to find Gary, who had a saw touch stolen, it's an impossible task.
No, it's never going to happen. Where was the dog, lastly, Nick?
Where was the dog?
Yeah.
It was working somewhere else.
Oh, right. Okay. It wasn't on strike. There's not industrial action.
What's
the dog's name?
The dog's name is Cody.
Good old Cody. Cody cannot be allowed to rest. It's an important factor. Great. Safe train journey. Nick Roach, thank you. Your police liaison officer for Selector DNA. And that does seem to work. It was a great idea, isn't it? So everybody, they nick all these crates of scotch, but they're all sprayed. And then you come around the house and the dog... Arr, 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 arr. There we are. And they've got all the crates of scotch. We might talk about that, but we're talking... Actually, let's talk a little bit about this homelessness minister. This is an ugly look, isn't it? Exclusive for the I newspaper. Congratulations to the teams over there. The government's homelessness minister removes tenants ejects, not evicts, be very careful, ejects tenants from her East London townhouse and then ups the rent by 700 quid. Roshanara Ali has previously spoken about how private renters are being exploited. Anne's in Staines upon Thames. Anne, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm actually not in Staines at the moment. I'm in the Peak District on my way to Oldham to one of my properties.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Sorry, 2 weeks ago, one of the tenants moved out without notice, and I'd already advised them that when they left, the house would need to be cleaned thoroughly because, I mean, the grey carpets, which were put down after they moved in 4 years ago, were literally black. Nicotine stains everywhere. The house smelt, etc. So they left without notice. I do have a forwarding address for them, but it's going to cost me over £3,000 to have the, I'm having the house cleaned today, which is why I'm going up there.
Yeah.
Then it has to be all recarpeted, new flooring, all the walls stripped and stained to get rid of the smell. So
that's going to cost more than three, isn't it? All of that?
Hopefully not up in... I mean, it's a two-bedroom, small two-bedroom property. Right. And the kitchen, bathroom and lounge floors don't need to be changed. The bathroom is more washing down and cleaning everything. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I'm also meeting the contractor this morning to get a quote for it. But
will you rent it again or will you flog it? Sell it?
No, I'll rent it again. I bought these properties 20 years ago for my pension.
Right.
They bring in a reasonable investment. I wasn't bothered about the property value.
Right.
But what I was trying to say, I'm not talking about being sympathetic to this lady with the property in East London, whatever, but I, with all my tenants, my rents are below the strict rental level because I try to look after them, and I'm lucky that, you know, I don't need to charge the full rent. I feel as if I've been taken advantage of here.
Well, you have.
And
there's no
renters, landlords and landladies, we are in an awkward position. It's being made more and more difficult for us to evict people, even if they're bad tenants, because obviously there's nowhere for them to go, so the government want to make it more difficult for
us. Where do you think these people have gone? Because they've obviously found another home without references, I assume, or they've forged the references.
Here's the interesting thing. Back in February, I gave them a reference with the local council to have a council property, and then when I... because they said they would do the house, and then when I finally saw them again, they said, no, they weren't going to do anything. It was wear and tear. I went back to the council and said, I rescind that reference for this reason and this reason. And the council said to me, well, it doesn't really matter. Your reference isn't that important. Now they've got another property. I'm also going to drive to that property today and see if it looks like it's, if it's in a privately rented area or in social housing.
They've got because another, they rent two properties, this family.
No. They've left my property and they've now rented another one.
And you're going to go there, are you?
I'm going to drive over there. Yeah, I got what I did when they gave the keys back to my contractor. I asked him to follow them so I knew where they were. Now, if I take them to court, Nick, they will be told to pay me £5 a week.
How much do they? They paid their rent. It's just the security fee that you didn't get back. Is that right?
No. I had to deposit when they moved out, but that's £650.
I see. Okay.
And how they didn't give any notice.
How many properties do you rent out?
I own four and I manage three for another friend of mine.
Well, that must be a nightmare.
Well, luckily, I've got tenants that have been with me for 16, 17 years. So it's not a nightmare. It really isn't. And, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Well, that's true.
But, you know, we need to get the... There, some things looked at. The fact that they can go to court... Oh, I would mention one other thing. I mentioned to them that I was putting the rent up by £50 a month.
Right.
And they said, we can't afford that. And I said, but you smoke 20 cigarettes a day minimum, which is 800... Well, what is it?
I don't know. I wouldn't know. Is it a 10 quid,
I think? £400 a month, at £10 a packet, let's say.
Goodness.
£300...
How do you know how many cigarettes they smoke?
I ask them.
Oh, right.
I just said how many, and because, but she's, the lady who smokes is also on disability benefit for COPD.
Sounds a bit of a rum lot, this. And I hope the house is in a more acceptable condition. A lot of people are going to have very negative views, but that is this woman's pension. That's how she funds her lifestyle, and we'll take more calls on that. after the news. Also talking about clampdown on the Botox botchers. 9:46 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The first migrant detentions have been made under a one-in, one-out deal with France. Reports in Russia suggest Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin could meet in the coming days. And people with no medical training are to be banned from carrying out invasive cosmetic procedures. LBC weather. Sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland. Mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still delays for about half an hour on the M25 clockwise from Junction 2 at the A2 to just after Junction 3 at the M20 after a lorry broke down earlier. That lorry's now been recovered, but it's still very slow. Very busy on the M3 southbound from Junction 3 at Lightwater to 4 at Camberley. There's a load of debris across the road, so one lane's had to be closed. Lots of problems on the underground. The Circle Line can't run between Edgware Road and Hammersmith. The District Line suspended from High Street, Kensington to Edgware Road. Also, the Hammersmith and City Line can't run between Edgware Road and Hammersmith, and the Met Line is part suspended southbound. This is going from Harrow on the Hill to Aldgate.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
One in five doctors are keen to quit this country. It's a peculiar and specific statistic. What does it mean?
James O'Brien on LBC.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
You just get it right, the customer service, the sort of communication. You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow, rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly we all need it. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
We'll come back to the hypocrisy of the homelessness minister. That is in single quotes. Ashley, you'll be the next caller on that. But Ray's in Oxted, who's been hanging on the line to talk about cosmetic surgery. Well, it's good this clampdown. What's your view of what the government needs to do? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
to me, it's a very simple solution to the problem. If the procedures are recommended by the NHS, then they should be fully supported from beginning to end. If they're a vanity project that is done privately, then a document should be signed to say that any corrective surgery would not take place on the NHS. It would be charged for.
I don't think you can get Botox on the NHS.
Well, whatever procedure, if it's a butt lift or whatever, you know, then if it's privately done, it should be privately paid for any corrective surgery afterwards.
But so it goes wrong, and in a number of instances, people have had major health concerns. Tragically, about a year ago, one young woman lost her life. You're not suggesting the NHS just turns its back on those folk, are you?
No, but how did they go into it in the first place? It was just for vanity. It wasn't for any medical reason. If it's for a psychological reason or a physical reason, absolutely fine. Support them to the end. But anyone who just wants to look better in a pair of jeans should be funding the whole thing themselves.
And if they can't?
Well, I don't know. You can't let anyone die. But if it's just a corrective procedure that has to be just paid for, then they should be paying for it.
Right. But you didn't answer it, because if they can't pay for it, then we must pay for it, unless you're suggesting we just let them die.
No. You don't let them die. But there are a lot of the procedures that just involve money. They're not life-threatening to be put to be corrected. Those should be paid for by the individuals. If it's then decided by the NHS that it's a life-threatening situation, then of course we have to deal with it. Okay. But it would put people off a little bit if they thought they might have to pay.
You take a bit of a negative view, I think, of cosmetic surgery, which is entirely your entitlement. You don't really believe in it, I sense, do you?
No, I do believe in it if it's for a psychological reason, or if it's to correct something that the NHS feels should be corrected, but not if you want your butt to look bigger, you know. I'm sorry.
All right, thank you for that. Let's come back to this homelessness story, or at least the homelessness minister who ejected. Some of you are sending emails talking about eviction. There is no suggestion they were evicted, they were ejected, but then the rent was put up. John in Belfast says, why doesn't the landlord cut back on luxuries so they don't have to get more money out of tenants by putting up the rent? Well, you'd have to ask that directly. Peter says, did the minister give adequate notice? Was their lease up? I don't think they were booted out. They weren't. Was their rent increased to the local level for similar properties? It is, again, the I newspaper has done a comprehensive job. It is broadly speaking in line with what you would pay in that area. Ashley's in Barnet on this. Ashley, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Yes, sir.
I've been in property for a while.
You've been in property, did you say? Yes.
That's my role.
I don't envy you.
I've got a commercial property portfolio, which also includes a number of residential flats.
Right.
Quite often, they might be flats above shops mm-hmm. or above offices. So they're generally not luxurious, but they're comfortable and well-maintained. But my thinking is this. When I let properties, I don't squeeze the rent up to the highest possible level. And by comparison, when I talk to professional estate agents, their benchmark is this. They ask the person, what's your gross income? And the rent has to be up to 40% of that, any more than they deem that they can't afford it.
I see.
So that means that someone is paying almost half of their gross income, so possibly more than half of their net income, on rent.
Right.
I think that's wrong. I've even used the word inhuman in the past. I think it's just wrong. And commercial forces have pushed it up to this level, which I don't think is right. So I don't generally squeeze tenants hard at all.
Right.
And as a result of that, my vacancy rate is zero. And I measure the reletting period not in days, but generally in hours, because it's almost always through recommendations for people who have just moved out. So I think, although it looks as if I'm losing possibly money by not squeezing the rents up to the highest maximum level, I think given that I never have void periods, and people tend to take good care of the properties and leave them in good condition, I think possibly it pays dividends financially, as well as feeling much better about the whole thing as a person.
You've never had a problem tenant?
I have, and I remember them both very clearly. I started my career in property approximately 35 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And all that time, I've only had two one was particularly violent, or threatened violence towards me, and the other one made such a noise, he was disrupting the other tenants in that particular building. So in both cases, I served the relevant notices and got them out. In one case, I had to take them to court. But those were exceptional, and as I said, two in decades.
And how many properties do you own or manage or let?
Well, in my roughly 60. Many of which are commercial.
Right.
Yeah, but many of them are commercial. The number of flats must be something like 30, maybe.
How has the world changed, the business changed over those 35 years?
Well, I've noticed that rents have gone up inexorably, but incomes haven't quite caught up with that.
Right.
So as a proportion, I can see that rents, by and large, are a much higher proportion of income than they used to be a long time ago. And rents used to be, loosely speaking, affordable. And now I think when you're pushing it up to the 40% maximum that I mentioned at the beginning of this call,
yes.
I think they're on the verge of being unaffordable and people are squeezed till the pips are squeaking. Okay. And I just don't think it's right.
Lastly, how has the legislation as regards landlord changed over those 35 years?
Well, there's some legislation coming up, which the biggest changes that I think will make a difference. At the moment, I can serve a Section 21 notice. It's called a no-fault notice.
Yeah.
So I can say to the tenant, I'd like you to leave at the end of this period, that you need to give them 2 months. And there's no fault, I just want you out.
Right.
And that's changing. Now you need to have a reason to get them out. Now, it could be that they're in breach of the lease for any number of justifiable reasons, or it might be that you'd like to live in the property yourself.
Mm.
So, or you might want to redevelop it. So there are reasons, but they have to be reasonable and genuine.
Ashley, thanks for all the background. Good luck. And you seem to be a very, very decent landlord in the rents that you charge and the research that you've done. Finishing, Ashley, to get one call in, we talked earlier in this hour about this trial of using effectively a spray that will leave the mark of Kane on football fans. That's not Harry Kane, mark of Kane. David's in Bromley. David, is it going to work? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. First time caller. I love your work.
Good job. Thank you very much.
I'm not entirely convinced by it, if I'm honest, Nick. On its own, mm-hmm. I'm an ex-police officer with the Met, and it sounds very similar to the burglary spray that we used to deploy.
How did that work?
So it was essentially DNA tagged water, which would rest on products that were of value.
Right.
And if you were burgled and they were ever recovered by the police, they could be scanned under, I think, UV light or some other system in custody.
What impact did that have?
I don't know. I can't give you numbers. I was just a humble response police officer. But if the same system, and it is going to be a very similar system, is used in something like a riot, you know, it's very much dependent on that person being arrested at some point within those few months while it's still on their clothing, because you can only detect it while you're in a custody suite.
Got what you're saying. David, you're bang on time. Thank you for your input. I've got to go. And you'll be interested, perhaps as others, because on tomorrow's show, referencing David, you're a police officer, I'm joined by the Chief Constable of one of the UK's biggest police forces, Craig Guildford at West Midlands Police, has been praised for achieving a significant drop in crime knife in a region, dropping among under-25s by some 15%, praised by Policing Minister Dame Diana Johnson on this show.
Do a shout-out, really, to the Chief Constable in the West Midlands,
yeah.
Craig Guildford, because he's been leading from the top to make sure that this is really had the focus that it needs.
He's joining me on the show next week, I've just been told in my ear.
He is really excellent and one to be commended.
Cutting knife crime. How did he do it? That's tomorrow. I'm done for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it is that story that I am intrigued by first this morning. The three Fs feature, I think, facts, feelings, and footballification. A Labour minister, a minister for homelessness, no less, is receiving something of a kicking because tenants were removed from her flat with plenty of notice, but nonetheless required to find somewhere new to live. And lo and behold, the flat goes back on the market with a £700 increase in the required rent. There are quite a lot of questions here, not least, what on earth is a homelessness minister doing in the landlord class? Has she done anything wrong? Has she done something very wrong? Or is it one rule for politicians and another for the rest of us?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, migrants who've arrived in the UK after crossing the English Channel have been detained for the first time under a new one-in, one-out deal. They were held by Border Force yesterday and could be returned to France within weeks. It's not clear how many people are being detained. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says she will robustly defend any legal challenges.
No one should be in any doubt. Anyone who arrives from now on is eligible for immediate detention and return. And this pilot will now build because we are determined that no one should be making this journey, and this is a vile trade in people.
The Kremlin says there has been an agreement with the US for a meeting between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. A Russian official has claimed it could take place in the coming days. The White House hasn't yet commented, but said yesterday a summit on Ukraine could be held very soon. Ministers have announced plans for tougher restrictions on cowboy cosmetic procedures. It follows huge growth in the unregulated treatments being carried out in homes, hotels and pop-up clinics. Hundreds of people have been maimed by botched Brazilian butt lifts and filler injections. The homelessness minister has been accused of evicting her tenants before increasing the rent on her property. Reports say Rushanara Ali hiked the asking price by £700 a month, just weeks after the previous rental contract ended. Sources close to the minister say it was only relisted because it hadn't sold. Health Minister Karen Smith was asked about the story when she spoke to LBC this morning.
I don't know the details of that. I know that she has complied with... Well, I need to know that she complies with the law and that we are, as a government, absolutely working on... private rented sector is a hugely important sector. And I'm here speaking to you from Bristol. It's where, you know, we've had to do lots of work on, and that's what our Renters' Rights Bill has brought forward to protect tenants.
And another cut in interest rates is expected this lunchtime. Most economists are expecting the Bank of England to reduce the base rate by a quarter point to 4% at midday. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 91.64. That's up 21. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland. Mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Save with EETV and get the ultimate flex.
Is anyone up for Squid Game on Netflix?
What about The Rookie on Now?
Wait, I need to catch up.
No spoilers here. With EETV, you can switch up your subscription so you never miss unmissable shows.
So I can watch whatever I want.
That's right. Switch on Netflix now and Discovery Plus to suit you. All on our ultra-reliable broadband. That's why TV lovers are choosing EE. Search EETV deals today.
New customers, 56% UK availability. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's all a little bit the thick of it, isn't it? A homelessness minister is on the front page of a newspaper today for the alleged offence of chucking tenants out of a flat that she owns and moving in new tenants at a £700 higher rent. Rushanara Ali is the minister of whom we speak, and she has spoken out in the past. There are so many moving parts to this story that I am going to somewhat stentoriously insist that you pay attention. All right? Good morning, by the way. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. She has spoken out in the past about private renters being exploited. That's the first... In fact, I'm going to do this like a professional grown-up radio presenter. I'm going to keep a list of all the moving parts in this story, all right? So I think, and you, as always, are welcome to tell me why I'm wrong, I think the most important element in the story is the fact that she's a homelessness minister. So that's the first moving part. I think the second most important bit is that she has spoken out in the past about private renters being exploited. She's a Labour minister, so she describes that as a bad thing. Of course, there are probably people in Parliament who think that, and indeed the media, who think that private renters being exploited is a wonderful thing, and good luck to all the landlords doing it. Other moving parts include the fact that the tenants in the flat, I beg your pardon, an East London townhouse, no less, the tenants in the East London townhouse were given, these are important, 4 months' notice that they weren't moving out. They were offered an opportunity to stay there while the house was marketed for sale. I'm taking everything on trust here from both the tenant and the spokesperson for the minister. If anything changes, if the parts start moving faster or if a part stops moving at any point in the next hour, I will bring the information to you immediately. So 4 months' notice, but in capital letters, an invitation to stay while they tried to sell the house. Okay? And they failed to sell the house, at which point the agencies put the property back on the market. It was relisted for rent, and the asking price, as it were, for the new tenants was, and the transactions were handled by agents, was £4,000 a month, some £700 a month, or, get the abacus out, Keith, about £225 a week more. With four tenants, it's an increase of about 50-something pounds a week more than had previously been agreed. If you want to get in early, you can hit the numbers now if you want. Oh, because it's a simple question of what do you think? 0345 606 0973. So those, I think, are the facts. Feel free to let me know if you feel that I've missed any out. Now, facts, feelings and footballification. If I'm going to use F words, I should probably be slightly careful about not stumbling over them in case the words that reach your ears are rather different from the ones that I intended to leave my lips. But those are the three Fs this morning, underpinning all of the moving parts. The facts, the feelings, and of course the footballification, because I'm only human. I mean, the horrors visited upon this country over the last 14 years and the continuing hideousness of the party that's grown up even further to the right than the Tories, mean that I feel quite defensive about the current government. Please, God, give somebody a chance to fix the mess that the country is currently in, and turn down, if you can, the volume of attacks coming from very carefully cultivated institutions on the people trying to fix the mess caused by precisely the politicians that these institutions put into power. And I'd give you the list again, shall I? Austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss. You could go on, but goodness me, the idea that we should be hankering for a return to any of that is beyond beyond calculation. So, feelings, and I'm mentioning that because I need to guard against footballification as well. I don't want to be more defensive of this minister than I would be of a Tory minister, and I certainly don't want to be more attacking as a way of sort of insulating against fears of footballification than I would be if it was somebody else. Because my feelings say, how the hell can a homelessness minister even be a landlord in the first place? How can anybody whose brief includes speaking out against private renters being exploited put her property in the hands of an agency whose job is to get her as much money as possible? 0345 606 0973. But if it was your property and it was in the hands of an agent, I told you there are a lot of moving parts, and the agent said, oh, we're going to put it on for £4,000. You haven't been able to sell it, so you're putting it back on the rental market. The previous tenants elected not to stay there while you were in the process of trying to sell it. And you learn from your agent, they've got another townhouse next door. The house next door, oh, we're renting out the house next door as well. We've got £4,000 a month for that. What should we put yours on for?